command of his faculties. And that would probably be putting it mildly. Bernie Sanders has called his statements the ravings of a dangerous and mentally unbalanced individual. Senator Chris Murphy said he'd spend Easter calling constitutional lawyers about the 25th Amendment. But here's the punchline. Trump himself brought up the 25th Amendment, which would remove him from office, at a cabinet meeting in March, saying, I can't say what we're going to do, because if I did, they'd probably institute the 25th. Very simple question this morning. Will the Americans ever do anything to remove this madman?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Pressure's building on the organisers of Wireless Festival to drop Kanye West following backlash over his booking as headliner. The rapper says he wants to show that he's changed after previously making anti-Semitic remarks. The Wireless boss, Melvin Benn, says people should forgive the performer, but has admitted the comments were abhorrent. The chief executive of the Board of Deputies of British Jews, Michael Weger, has told LBC any appearance this summer would be totally unacceptable.
I think it's really extraordinary that Mr. Benn forgives Kanye West on behalf of the Jewish community. I found that statement really problematic. In fact, it was pretty outrageous. The only people who are able to offer forgiveness to Mr. West would be the Jewish community, and that would take a great deal more work than just putting out this mealy-mouthed apology when there's a risk of his concert in London falling apart.
Donald Trump has rejected warnings that his plans to target Iran's power plants and bridges could be a war crime. The US president has given Tehran until tonight to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Paddy McGuinness is the UK's former deputy national security adviser. He's told LBC if Mr. Trump acts on his threat, it's unlikely that global shipping through the strait will resume immediately.
Even if the military capabilities of Iran around the Strait of Hormuz are reduced in the course of this spike in military activity, which now looks highly likely, it'll be quite a time before the normal flow of traffic goes through the Strait of Hormuz. And indeed, we need a higher flow to make up for the lost flow we've lost in this last period. So for us and our economic well-being, that's some way away.
Health Secretary Wes Streeting has warned the resident doctor strike in England will leave some patients waiting in pain or anxiety. Members of the British Medical Association are walking out for 6 days in their row with the government over pay and jobs. The BMA has rejected a 4.9% pay increase for this financial year. The Conservatives have announced plans to crack down on illegal traveller camps if they win the next general election. Under the proposals, police would be given the power to ban travellers from returning to certain areas. Traveller groups have previously pointed to a chronic shortage of authorised sites and have called for further mediation. And the price of stamps goes up today. The cost of posting a first-class letter is rising by 10 pence to £1.80, while a second-class stamp is rising by 4 pence to 91p. Royal Mail says the increases are necessary because people are sending far fewer letters, while the number of addresses continue to increase. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 27 at 10,464. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry, warm and sunny day for much of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the west of Scotland later. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure. I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. Probably will need some 2x4s on when I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you. Lewis Goodall here for James O'Brien all this week on LBC. I know what you're thinking, and I was gutted too. Suella Braverman wasn't available. But we will make do, won't we, as far as we can, in the great man's absence. There is a very, very simple question that I want to put to you this morning and discuss. And in some ways, You might think that we could have talked about this at any point over the, certainly, one and a bit of the Trump terms, at any point since Donald Trump famously descended down the golden escalator in Trump Tower in 2015 and announced to global incredulity at the time, certainly United States political incredulity, that he was running for president. But after the events of the Easter weekend and on the eve of what would be war crimes committed by the United States and the President of the United States against the Iranian public, the Iranian civilian population, the sorts of war crimes that we rightly, frequently harangue President Putin for, the destruction of civilian energy infrastructure. We could be only less than 24 hours away from that. And given the profane statements that Donald Trump made over the course of the weekend, the question this morning, I think, is very simple. Has the President of the United States lost whatever was left of his mind? And a second question on top of that, which is that if that is the case, is there anything, and this is perhaps the more interesting question, is there anything left within the United States and in United States politics that would remove him? What would Donald Trump have to do for his own cabinet to find a spine and remove him from office? Just a recap of where we've been over just since last Friday. 30-odd days since the Iran war started. Donald Trump gave his first address to the nation. In 19 minutes, he somehow managed to say all of the following. That the Iran war was won, but that it must continue. That Iran's new leaders are less radical and much more reasonable, but at the same time, that he intends to blast them into oblivion. Back to the Stone Age, the reasonable people into oblivion. That's where we are. On Iran's military, he said, they've no navy, no communications, no air force. They've shot everything they have to shoot. There is nothing left in a military sense. And then only minutes later said most of Iran's naval power has been sunk. So there was a navy, but he just said that it didn't exist. Days later, of course, on the Straits of Hormuz, he said, and implored the Iranian government to use that military, which he said doesn't exist, to open the bleeping straits. You, B word. On the straits closed by Iran, his position has been fluid. He told allies they need to sort it. Go to the straits, just take it. The hard part is done. It should be easy. Then, days later, he suggested that America should charge tolls instead. What about us charging tolls, he said. Why shouldn't we? We're the winner. We won. Two policies. One press conference. On Easter Sunday, as I said, he posted this to social media. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, as if it's like infrastructure week or apprentices week, as our government might do. All wrapped up in Iran. There will be nothing like it. He ended the post with praise be to Allah. And when a reporter asked him directly, just 24 hours ago, is the war winding down? Or is it escalating? He said, I don't know. I can't tell. It depends what they do. The President of the United States running a war on Easter Sunday, saying that he doesn't know what's going to happen. Speaking of a press conference last night, the President elaborated on his plans to strike bridges and power plants in Iran tonight.
We have a plan because of the power of our military where every bridge in Iran will be decimated by 12 o'clock tomorrow night, where every power plant in Iran will be out of business, burning, exploding, and never to be used again. I mean, complete demolition by 12 o'clock. And it'll happen over a period of 4 hours if we wanted to. We don't want that to happen. We may even get involved with helping them rebuild their nation. And you know what? If that's the case, the last thing we want to do is start with power plants, which are among the most expensive thing, and bridges.
This is the President of the United States, the erstwhile leader of the free world, threatening, as I say, to employ the sorts of tactics that we abhor from the tyrant President Putin. The deliberate targeting of energy infrastructure, which will plunge millions of innocent, ordinary Iranians into the cold and into the dark. And the president, most of the time, he was a little more sorrowful about it there, but most of the time being entirely comfortable, if not relishing, in the act of doing it. Something that we have seen from this president that we have not seen from previous occupants of the office is a straightforward bloodlust, a relishing which goes cascades right through his administration, his silly little tin-eared, tin-pot defence secretary, war secretary, whatever he likes to call himself, a man who, frankly, not only has a brain that's too small and suits that are too small to match. Pete Hegseth is talking about sending Iranian navalmen, submariners to the bottom of the ocean and relishing the prospect of doing it. This bloodlust, this curdling bloodlust around war, the sort of thing that we expect from, again, to use that phrase, tin pot dictatorships around the world, not democracies anchored in authority and legitimacy and democracy. But it goes beyond that. And this, I think, is the central crux of what I want to get at this morning, which is the president's own state of mind. It has always been difficult to disaggregate with Donald Trump when he is affecting artifice, when he is putting on a show, when he's simply, and he does this, he can be very comical. He's just making people laugh. And when there has been genuine mental decline. Frankly, for a man who has been shouting and screaming for 10 years, it can be hard to disaggregate that from genuine signs of mental decline and senility. But I think we have to start asking the question, just as we ought to have asked it more with Joe Biden, for whom the signs were more obvious. Just listen to this. This is Donald Trump talking about the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un.
It's not just NATO. You know who else didn't help us? South Korea didn't help us. You know who else didn't help us? Australia didn't help us. You know who else didn't help us? Japan. We've got 50,000 soldiers in Japan to protect them from North Korea. We have 45,000 soldiers in South Korea to protect us from Kim Jong-un, who I get along with very well, as you know. Do you notice he said very nice things about me? He used to call Joe Biden a mentally person, okay? So don't tell me about your stuff. Joe Biden, he said he's a mentally person. He was so nasty to Joe Biden. It was terrible. But to me, he likes Trump. And do you notice how nice things are with North Korea? It's very nice.
There's Donald Trump there basically saying that he prefers the company of and prefers the most horrendous, autocratic, tyrannical dictator possibly anywhere in the world, Kim Jong-un, to his fellow countrymen and predecessor and successor as President of the United States, Joe Biden. President Trump, just listen to this as well. This is President Trump, I think just yesterday, sat at a table, past, it might have been Easter Sunday actually, surrounded by children at a White House Easter event.
You know, Biden would use the auto pen. He'd have an auto pen following him, you know, Joe Biden. He didn't sign. He was incapable of signing his name. So they'd follow him around with this big machine, you know what it was called? An auto pen. And he'd have the auto pen signed for him. He'd take the paper, hand it to his guys, they'd sign it with an auto pen, get it back. Not too good, right? Better to sign it.
That ain't
That's the fake news.
I made Air Force.
Who likes the fake news? Does anybody like the fake news?
No.
I mean, you've got to laugh. That is the President of the United States, a man who is approaching his ninth decade. He's been President of the United States twice. He's had one of the most extraordinary lives, political lives, whatever you think about him, of anybody who has ever lived. And there he is at the Easter weekend, sat amongst a group of toddlers, talking to them about Joe Biden and the auto pen. And asking them what they think, these four-year-olds, about the auto pen, and then asking them what they think about the fake news. I don't know what Don is expecting in terms of a response. I mean, it'd probably be more erudite than anything he's capable of. But nonetheless, that is what we're looking at. We're looking at the President of the United States talking to a group of children about an auto pen. Imagine if that had been Joe Biden. Joe Biden talking and expecting some sort of response from a group of people who can barely walk, asking them about a political controversy that briefly illuminated the American political sky for about 30 seconds 3 years ago or 2 years ago. That's what we're talking about here. And meanwhile, and this is all just one weekend, right? We're not just like traipsing around, scrambling around through the archives, trying to put together a case here. Frankly, it's a matter of what not to play to you this morning from what has happened this weekend. This is Trump suggesting that when he's done with the presidency of the United States, or who knows, perhaps he'll do it concurrently like some sort of Holy Roman Emperor, he might run for the president of Venezuela.
The people of Venezuela, they say if I ran for president of Venezuela, I'm polling higher than anybody has ever polled in Venezuela. So after I'm finished with this, I can go to Venezuela. I will quickly learn Spanish. It won't take too long. I'm good at language. And I will go to Venezuela. I'm going to run for president. But we're very happy with the president-elect that we have right now, the people that are running it.
I want you to ring 0345-6060973. If you've got any real justification or idea for how we cannot conclude that the President of the United States is senile, on the basis of everything that we've just heard there, and that's just a few clips. We've had a weekend where the President of the United States is issuing profane tweets or truths or whatever it is that he happens to call them, threatening war crimes against the people of Iran. There are people in Washington, D.C. even muttering darkly about the possibility of the use of nuclear weapons in Iran. We've got the President of the United States telling us that the Straits of Hormuz are completely unimportant and are in a war that is basically over already or ended 4 weeks ago, but by the way, might go on for another 3 or 4 weeks still. And yet none of us are talking about whether this President of the United States is suitable or appropriate to remain in the office. So there are two questions that I want to talk to you about this morning. 0345-6060973. Can we conclude that the President of the United States is senile, is mad? And that's important, not least because we spent all that time, didn't we, self-flagellating and talking about how could it be that we did not expect and respect the evidence in front of our eyes when we saw Joe Biden's mental and cognitive decline. Are we making the same mistake again now? And if we are making the same mistake again now, perhaps the more interesting question is, what would Donald Trump have to do for the American cabinet to find what should be somewhere in the middle of their back, I think it's known as a spine, and do something about it and invoke the 25th Amendment, which would remove him from office? What would Trump have to do? Because we've seen this weekend, we've seen the tweets swearing at the Iranians, we've seen the tweets mocking Islam, we've seen him sitting with a group of toddlers asking them what they think about the auto pen. We've seen all of that. We've seen him flanked by the Easter Bunny this weekend. I'm not making this up. Go and look at it for yourself. Flanked by the Easter Bunny and giving pronouncements from the White House balcony about Iran while he's doing it. We've seen all of that. We've seen the threat of war crimes. We've seen him start a war without end that he claims is already over. What over and above all of this might he have to do for the Americans to remove him from office? And maybe your answer to that, and it might actually be certainly my starting position right now, is there is nothing that he could do. Such is his grip on American politics, on the Republican Party, on the MAGA base, that he can act with total impunity. But if that's the case, if there is no mechanism left, either from the Congress or from his own cabinet, to remove him, no matter how mad or deranged or bad he becomes, then can we conclude from that? Must we conclude from that the American political system is entirely broken? Because if you cannot or will not remove a chief executive, a leader, a president who is mad, bad, deranged, and all three, then surely the system itself must be bust. 0345-60-60973. 0345-60-60973. Start the conversation this morning. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien. All this week on LBC. The time is just approaching 10:18.
LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2027 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only. At all protected.
Whether you're seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany, JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you make more informed investment decisions. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you could start making the most of your new tax-free allowances today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing to learn more. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk. Tax rules vary by individual status and may change.
At Tesco, we know that beans...
Mains Heinz.
And you love to ask.
Have you had yours?
All of you.
Love it.
Hate it.
And because...
I'm worth it.
When you need low prices on brands you love, like 150 grams of Heinz beans, 12-pack of Weetabix, 250 grams of Marmite, or 700 millilitres of L'Oreal Elvive Colour Protect Shampoo, look out for the Everyday Low Prices logo in-store and online. Tesco. Every little helps. Everyday low prices includes thousands of products across the majority of larger stores and online prices held until the 10th of May. Selected branded products only.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 10:19. Just a reminder of how the president might be removed, because the question that we're asking this morning is what it would take for Donald Trump to be removed. If there is anything that Donald Trump might do for him to be removed, I'm particularly interested to hear from Americans who might have a view on this, the sort of psyche of where America is at. 0345 60 60973. There are only two ways to get rid of an American president from office. One is for him to or her to be impeached and convicted by the Congress. That has never happened before. Three American presidents have been impeached before: Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and Donald Trump twice, of course. But then you have to go to the Senate, and you have to have a two-thirds majority in the Senate. Very, very hard to do, practically, and it ain't going to happen. You're not going to get, I think, 66, 67 senators to convict him. So the only other way of doing it is via the 25th Amendment. That's the thing that people talk about all the time. This was passed in 1967 after JFK was assassinated. There are four sections to it. The first three basically are straightforward and don't apply, that therefore they die or resign or temporarily hand over plow. It's section four of the 25th Amendment that might apply. The vice president, that's J.D. Vance, plus a majority of the cabinet would have to write a letter to Congress declaring the president unable to discharge his duties. The president is immediately suspended. If Trump then writes back saying, "I'm fine, lads," which I think we can assume the president would definitely do. Maybe he'd use the auto pen, which he definitely would. Congress would have 21 days to decide. And then to remove him, you'd then need a two-thirds majority in both the House and the Senate. So even there, it would be difficult. He would have to do something truly mad. But then again, hasn't he been doing that for the best part of 10 years? 0345 6060 973. Alex is in Witham, Pretty Patel's constituency, no less, in Essex. Alex, good morning.
It is indeed. Hi, Lewis. How are you
doing? Very well, thank you. What do you think about this? Is there anything that Donald Trump could do to get the Americans to remove him from office?
No. And to be honest, I think the question of Trump's mental condition is now largely irrelevant. Because it doesn't matter what he does, such is the weakness of the American regime, or the American state, that there's nothing he can't do that will be enough.
How do you mean? Explain what you mean by that.
Well, we had a look before at Greenland, for instance, and his attempts to force the Danes into handing it over.
Yeah.
Then, of course, we had his bombing of drug boats, alleged drug boats, with Venezuela.
Yeah.
And his abduction of Maduro.
Yeah.
And his wife.
Although lots of Americans like that, or certainly on the Republican side anyway.
Yeah, but there was also the issue of the second strike on that boat, which, if you look at international law, is a slam dunk war crime.
Yeah.
And now you've got this war as well. So it doesn't seem like there's anything he can do.
You mean anything that he could do to actually start a political process to remove him?
I don't think so. I don't think there is.
But that's bad, isn't it, Alex? Just thinking about the health of American democracy, I mean, the Americans talk about the Founding Fathers all of the time. I think the Founding Fathers, the 25th Amendment wasn't around when they were around, but certainly there were mechanisms in the Constitution originally to remove a bad, mad, or deranged president. I think that they would be horrified. The whole point of America was that they wanted to overthrow a mad, deranged tyrant. At least that's how they saw him at the time. And if we're saying that America now basically is so unhealthy politically, so polarized, that they would never get rid of their president, no matter what he does, given that they are the most powerful country in the world and he's the most powerful country in the world, that is disturbing, isn't it?
It is very disturbing. And I think we need to look at what happened on the 6th of January 2021 to find where this started, because the Republicans had the perfect opportunity to stand up, to find a spine and impeach him and convict him. but they didn't.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And that opened the door to what we are now seeing today.
Alex, grateful to you. Lisa is in Southampton. Morning, Lisa.
Hi. I don't think the 25th Amendment will work because I've never seen it in my lifetime. I've been alive during 12 presidents. I voted since 1976. Even though I've been here 42 years, I still vote every 2 years. And I think
did you vote for Ford or Carter?
Well, I voted for Carter.
Oh, well, there we go.
I'm a lifelong Democrat.
But
I think the only thing is, do you remember back in November when there was seven senators that stood up and said that the military should not feel obliged to commit an illegal act?
Yes.
And they were crucified for that by this administration.
That's remind me, were they all Democratic senators or were there some Republicans?
They were all
Democrats. Yeah,
they were all Democrat, but they were all people. I mean, obviously, Captain Kelly, an astronaut and decorated war veteran.
He's a Democratic senator from Arizona.
Yeah, it all had background in intelligence or in the military. And they said, and they got crucified, but those servicemen and women, if they do commit these war crimes, they are culpable for an act. It is war crime. So would they? Are they going to say no?
How do you feel as an American, Lisa, when you hear the President of the United States, and as a lifelong Democrat, I'm sure you've become familiar with this feeling one way or another, particularly of late. But nonetheless, is it a step above? Is what we've seen over the course of the weekend a step above even for Trump?
I think he's mentally, and a lot of physicians have weighed in on this. I think he's mentally not well, and I do think as my mother and grandmother both had Alzheimer's, and I feel that he is showing dementia because he can't actually. If you notice, when he always goes back to the same talking points because those are the ones he can remember.
Yeah, like when he was talking to the kid. I mean, I've sort of made a bit of light of it, but it isn't really funny, is it? I mean, like when he's talking to a group of kids. I mean, this really sort of made me think twice because, as I've been saying, it's sort of hard with Trump, isn't it? Because, you know, at various points over the last 10 years, and sometimes it's been his shtick. He intentionally sounds a bit mad or sort of deranged. But I do think it feels, I can't quite imagine, am I wrong to think that, you know, the Trump of 10 years ago, would he have sat in front of a group of toddlers babbling on about the auto pen? I kind of think probably not.
No, and the thing is also, I worry about his clouded judgment with his hatred of Obama, was pulling out the JCPO agreement, which actually was the only thing that we knew what they had in Iran, and also his hatred of Biden, and it's clouding all of his judgment. He can't seem to, and nobody will tell him no. And you know, Pete Hegseth has gotten rid of 12 very senior military figures. And when you start doing that, that's a sign of an authoritarian government.
It's interesting, Lisa. There was obviously at the tail end of the Nixon administration, which was obviously very different. And that was a time, of course, when American political institutions were working far better because in the end it was Republican senators who did it for Nixon.
For the CIA Allende. Problem.
Sure, but I mean, you know, it was Republican senators who, in the end, went to the White House and said, "Mr. President, the game's up." Almost impossible to imagine that today.
I think, Lewis, you have to understand the way our system works. I think they are so afraid of being primaried, like Liz Cheney, that they will do, especially the House of Representatives, because obviously they're elected every 2 years. Some senators have more leeway, especially the ones that have another 4 years. But I think that they won't because they are frightened of their own careers and they're putting themselves before country.
Well, what I was going to say is, though, at the very end of the Nixon administration, there was a missive that went around the Department of Defense, basically concerned that basically starting to withdraw the ability of Nixon to use nuclear weapons because they were so concerned that he might try and get out of or extricate himself from the demise of his political career by doing something stupid with regards to nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Do you think that would happen today? Would the American Department of Defense or Department of War, as they now call themselves, would there be enough resistance institutionally to resist a president that was doing something particularly insane? So I'm thinking in particular of, I don't know, nuclear weapons in Iran.
I think there would be an uproar between with Congress and the Senate. They would come together and they would basically walk into the cabinet room and say, enough. And because we've had, and Americans, we've had enough. I mean, I'm British as well. I've been here 42 years, but, and I've taught politics and history, and I cannot, I can't believe that we would allow that to happen, but I'm also very frightened that he has a nuclear code.
And do you think that there is anything, just in terms of his actions personally, is there anything that he could do, to answer the question directly we're talking about this hour, is there anything he could do that would force the American Constitution and the American political system to kick in to remove him from office? Or does he basically have carte blanche to be as mad and deranged as he likes?
I think if he attacks Iran's infrastructure, they will, that will be the, this war is not popular against, with all MAGA Republicans. And he, you know, some of these states he relied on. And, you know, when I agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene, in this again, and also, Tucker Carlson, there is a movement now in America, especially amongst the MAGA Republicans. There is a movement that this is a bridge too far. And I think he will be told, if he bombs Iran, that's it. I think that's game over.
Lisa in Southampton there, I have to say, there are clearly strains within the MAGA coalition. As a result of the Iran war. But I have to say, being in Dallas just a week or so ago, going to CPAC, which is the sort of main conservative sort of political conference in the American political calendar, I think that this holy grail that liberals have had and progressives have had for many years, looking for the issue that will split the MAGA coalition, I suspect Iran is probably, for the most part, just another one of those, a chimera, just another issue which we think is going to come along. Why do I say that? Well, at CPAC, full of MAGA diehards, delegates and so on, yeah, they were worried about Iran. Yeah, they didn't love it. But two things. One, they still completely trust Trump. They were often expressing that distaste for the Iran war. You know what? Wearing MAGA hats and the flag of the Shah, the old flag of Persia. He is the political Pied Piper for these people. Where he goes, they will, they must follow. And secondly, insofar as there is concern about it, they don't blame him for it. They think he's been manipulated by someone, whether it's the Israeli government or whoever it happens to be. They constantly believe that ultimately either Trump's judgment will be vindicated or he can't be blamed for when that judgment goes awry. There's a word for that, or there's a phrase for that. It's called a cult of personality, and we've had 10 years of evidence for it. We're going to be putting some of these points to a former Trump advisor. That is coming up after the news headlines at 10:31 with Dominic Ellis.
Kanye West says he wants to meet members of the UK's Jewish community after a backlash over his headline booking for Wireless Festival. The rapper says he wants to show that he's changed after previously making anti-Semitic remarks. The Israeli military has told people in Iran to avoid trains and railway lines, warning of a risk to life. President Trump's deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz expires tonight. And the health secretary has told LBC that resident doctors have been the standout winners of recent public sector pay rises. West Streeting's comments come as tens of thousands of doctors start a 6-day of strike action in England. LBC weather, a dry, warm and sunny day for much of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the west of Scotland by the late afternoon. A high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
When things don't go to plan, you need car insurance you can rely on. That's why at NFU Mutual, we pay out on 99% of car insurance claims with no quibble. And if you're hit by an at-fault uninsured driver, your no-claims discount is protected. Conditions apply. We do this so you can enjoy the more important things. It's no wonder we're a Which Best Buy for Car Insurance 2026. For quality car insurance you can rely on, search NFU Mutual today.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
The future isn't always clear, but at Yorkshire Building Society, we help you focus on the milestones that matter. The little moments and the big days. The times they need you and the moments they grow. focus on what matters, saving for their future and yours with a cash ISA from Yorkshire Building Society. Rated a Which? Recommended provider for savings accounts. Search YBS Cash ISAs to open an account with us.
Technology is always evolving, isn't it, Sarah?
That's right, Albert.
First vinyl, then CDs, and now streaming?
It's streaming, Albert.
Yes, and smart meters are evolving too. Energy suppliers are switching up older smart meter hardware for new kit, so you keep all your benefits.
Like access to flexible schemes and tariffs?
Yes, that could offer rewards. So when your energy supplier contacts you, switch up, stay smart.
Eligibility varies. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
DU.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Time is 10:34. Should just say, of course, it isn't only the president's political opponents who are now questioning his mental faculties. A former White House lawyer believes that President Donald Trump has gone insane. The cabinet will not invoke the 25th Amendment for a man who is clearly insane. That comes from Ty Cobb, who served as a senior attorney during the first Trump term. Cobb argued the ongoing war with Iran, his ballroom project, and the president's late-night social media tirades are evidence of a declining mental state. He said Trump historically and continuously has been guided exclusively by his narcissism. We're going to see more and more crazy stuff. So that's from a former White House lawyer during the first Trump term. Question for you this hour is whether or not the Americans will ever do anything, or what Trump would have to do for the Americans to remove Donald Trump from office. 0345 6060973. JP says there's nothing Trump can do that the Americans will get him out of office. That is why Trump isn't a short-term problem. America could easily vote in another madman that tries to impose their will on the world like Trump. Trump has shown me not to trust America itself. That's the other question. If the Americans don't, if there is no mechanism that's left for the American Constitution to remove a president who is clearly unfit for office at that point, is the American Constitution still working? Well, we're joined now by Jan Halper-Hayes, Global Vice President of Republican Overseas, also from the Trump transition team of 2016. Jan Halper-Hayes, thanks so much for joining us on the show this morning. Grateful for your time. You've defended the president for years. He said yesterday the only planes lost were to friendly fire at a press conference about rescuing a crew shot down by Iran. At what point does defending that become impossible?
Well, I'm not sure you have that right. The planes that were quote-unquote lost were actually destroyed by our soldiers once they rescued the fallen soldier. We were not going to leave that equipment for it to be confiscated and for all of our technology and intel to be gained by the Iranians.
But the whole point of the press conference, he said the only planes really that we were lost were like friendly fire. The focus of the press conference was the rescue of two airmen whose F-15 fighter plane was shot down by Iran last week. That is something that Trump had previously acknowledged. In addition, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Dan Kane confirmed during the press conference that during the rescue effort, the US also lost an A-10 Thunderbolt close air support plane after it was hit by Iranian fire. So I put it again, the president is claiming that the only planes lost were due to friendly fire at a press conference, which was all about a plane which was down by Iranian fire. He's lost it, hasn't he?
No, he hasn't lost it. And to lead in with one biased Ty Cobb, who wasn't very happy in that administration, where's the balance here, Lewis?
Well, John, I'm simply asking you how it can be that we have a president. Can we trust a president of the United States and his judgment when he is at a press conference about a downed American plane as a result of Iranian fire, My point is that he's not in command of his own faculties, clearly. Either that or he's lying.
Well, if you come to those two conclusions, why do you even have me on here to discuss what the issues really are, if that's the angle you're taking?
Well,
we've got Gulf nations who are supporting his actions, who are encouraging him and not wanting him to have a weak ceasefire. So why don't we talk about those critical issues as opposed to going by your opening of one person who feels that way? And there are others that feel that way. I'm not saying he's the only one, but that is not the only perspective, and it is not necessarily the correct perspective.
I'm just wondering what you would have said if Joe Biden had called a press conference about a downed American plane that had been downed by Iranian fire and a rescue effort as a result of Iranian fire, and then claimed, and he claimed during that press conference, that actually all the planes had been shot down by friendly fire and it was nothing to do with the Iranians. Would you say that that would have been an example of a president fully in command of his faculties and you wouldn't have criticized him?
Well, I didn't come on to discuss if he's to take something he said in a press conference and go back and forth about this issue. That is not why I agreed to come on.
Is his state of mind not important?
His state of mind is very important, and the way that you presented it is negative, as LBC does. And so would you like another perspective on his state of mind, or do you want me to just go along with your constant criticism of him just because one person said it doesn't necessarily make it right? And I'm not saying other people don't feel that way. Some people genuinely do. Even Alex Jones, the great conspiracy theorist, is talking about the 25th Amendment. But they're missing key points.
Sure. Well, I just wonder, when the reporter asked him directly, is the war winding down or is it escalating? He said, I don't know. I can't tell. It depends what they do.
Is that all you can talk about?
What, is that really, what, the war?
You just want, no, you just want to harp on one comment.
No, but that's a different comment.
Conference?
That's a different comment. I'm putting a second comment to you. He was put to him, he asked him, is the war winding down or is it escalating? He said, I don't know and I can't tell. And you will understand, Jan Halper-Hayes, that the president...
Very much I can respond to that.
Please, and
he's
just let me finish. Let me just finish,
because right.
you will understand, you will understand that our listeners and people around the world might have a little bit of concern about whether the president is in command, not only of his own faculties, but events, given that a few weeks ago he was telling us the war was basically already done, and today he's on the verge, he says, of bombing Iran back to the Stone Age and bombing its energy infrastructure. Which is it?
Okay. One of the things that Trump said from the very beginning is he is not going to ever tell you exactly what he is going to do. Now, I understand from the viewer's perspective, from the listener's perspective, that when he says, well, I'd like it to end, but I'm not sure when it's going to end, he is doing that because he doesn't want to alert the enemy. It is not a question of whether we need to have all of the exact facts.
He has alerted the enemy. He's told them that he's going to bomb them to kingdom come tomorrow.
He said he might be doing it tomorrow night.
No, he said it was a deadline. He said it's a deadline. He said unless they open the straits, he's going to bomb them. He's going to bomb Iranian energy infrastructure. Would you accept that that would be a war crime?
Okay. No, I would not accept it as a war crime. And when you take things out of context and you don't listen to the entire thing, because yes, he gave them a deadline. And yes, he said that that is his intention. And at the end of that press conference, he also added, and it might happen tomorrow night. Now, one of the reasons he added might is, I don't know if you picked up, but Iran is asking young people to go and gather around these power facilities. If there are people that are gathering around it, I can tell you he will not bomb it.
Tuesday, just to give listeners the quotes of what he said,
tonight.
Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the effing strait, you crazy bees, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah. Do you think that sounds like a man who is thinking entirely straightforwardly and is entirely in control of his own faculties?
Yes, and that was it. You just read his text, his post on social media.
Yeah.
But you're not quoting when in a live press conference how he answered questions.
So we think that threatening to bomb Iranian energy infrastructure is acceptable. No, I'm just asking you. You say it's not a war crime.
I know you're asking me, but I would love to have an intelligent conversation about the issue rather than the fact that what LBC loves to do is...
Let's quote the president. Use his own words.
Let's make Trump a nutcase. And if that's how you
want to
go about
fault.
It...
Okay. It's not LBC, Jan Halper-Hayes, who makes the president tweet something like, open the effing strait. That's his behavior. That's his crazy behavior, not ours.
But you added crazy.
Well, I think that most people...
Not everyone perceives it as crazy.
You think it's normal and a good idea for the president of the United States. On Easter Sunday, the Easter weekend, he's backed by the evangelicals. And here's a man using profane language and mocking 2 billion people around the world in a random post, apparently off the cuff, at the same time threatening war crimes in Iran. Do you think that these are the actions of a president who is fully in command of his faculties?
I think it's a very self-centered interpretation of anyone who celebrated Easter to think about it from their perspective. Mm-hmm. Iran does not celebrate Easter. He wasn't talking to us. He was talking to Iran.
Right.
And look, if you want to nitpick over these things, I will tell you that, yes, there was profanity. Yes, it was very direct. Yes, it was very blunt. It was not quote unquote presidential. But would you like this to go on? And is it all Donald Trump's fault? Or what are we going to talk about? Iran for 47 years has actually been the top supporters of terrorism.
He's desperate, isn't he? The truth, Jan Halper-Hayes, is that he's desperate because he knows that he has no power to force them to open the straits. And that's why he's using profane language.
No, it's not. And that is just an unintelligent interpretation. You know, and you're not factoring in what the Gulf states are encouraging.
You think the Gulf states are happy right now?
Oh, you bet they're happy right now.
Right, okay.
And if you don't know that, go on Google, because the Associated
Nothing's
Press
ever wrong there.
Reported it. Go on Google. The Associated Press has reported that they do not want him to agree to a weak ceasefire.
Right.
Do your research.
Illegal, just on the question of research, just one more time. If the president were to attack Iranian civilian power infrastructure, the sort of thing that President Putin does on a regular basis, you wouldn't agree that that would be a war crime?
No, it is not a war crime.
Despite the fact that when President Putin does it, international analysts and legal experts all say that it's a war crime.
Well, a lot of people do say that, and you can get the other side of the argument as well.
What is the other side of the argument? How could attacking...
That it's not a war crime. If you are attacking infrastructure, it does not make it a war crime. This is power and bridges.
Under the Geneva Conventions and the laws of war, you cannot deliberately target civilian infrastructure. Power plants, bridges, water treatment facilities, if their primary function is civilian, they're protected.
Well, that is... is that the UN interpretation?
Well, a retired US Air Force judge advocate general has said that Trump's language was itself already a war crime because threatening strikes whose primary purpose is to terrorize a civilian population violates the laws of war. Threatening to destroy every bridge and every single power plant, which is what the president has said in the state of Iran, that is an indiscriminate attack. That is by definition a war crime. That is from Lieutenant Colonel Rachel Van Landingham. And she spent 20 years in the Air Force, now a professor at Southwestern Law School.
Okay, and how come you're not quoting Raisin Kane or Pete Hegseth?
Well,
or how
Pete Hegseth has got something of a vested interest. He works for Trump, so that's probably why I don't treat him as an impartial source.
And why not any of the leaders that are commanding this? Why are you not quoting them?
Well, what I'd say, Jan Halperhes, is that I'm just using the president's words. It is an established fact that indiscriminate attacks, and the president has threatened to destroy every bridge and every bit of civilian infrastructure, raise the whole thing. By definition, they cannot all be military targets. They must be civilian targets. And every international legal analyst would say that's a war crime. Even President Putin hasn't done that.
Okay, and he said to take them back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, I think that would probably qualify as a war crime as well.
That probably would.
Oh, right. Okay, well, we got somewhere. Jan Halperhes there, Global Vice President of Republican Overseas, also from the Trump transition team of 2016. Want your thoughts on what you've just heard? What does it tell us about the Americans who are supporting Trump? And also want your answers to the main question, which is, what exactly would Trump have to do, if anything, to be removed from office? What do you think of what you heard from Dr. Jan Halperhes there? 0345-6060973, 0345-6060973. The time is 10:49.
This is LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which 9 years running.
Young people today, can they really handle responsibility? Or are we just kidding ourselves?
To McDonald's.
And a mayo chicken.
Some think young people can't manage. We disagree. That's why one in three McDonald's managers are under 25.
Hey, Kira.
Hey, Val. How are you?
You right? Yeah, I'm good. It's busy out there, though.
Like Kira from South London. She's 23 and manages a team of 20.
Let's go.
Leadership. Making it happen at McDonald's.
Ready for a new kitchen? Wix kitchen experts can support you with clever designs and a professional installation. Book your free kitchen design appointment at Wix.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison's to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 26 of the 3rd, 26. Morrison's also sell other products. See online for more details.
We're just being out there brake flying.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got a 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with a 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 10:52. Always entertaining to speak to Jan Halperhes. She's nothing if not enthusiastic for the cause, and we've got to respect that. Ash is in Northampton. Ash, good morning. What do you think about Trump?
Good morning. Do you know, it took his rant on Sunday for me to finally understand what he's doing.
Go on.
Which kind of throws a spanner in the works of is he mentally incompetent or not? Because if he is, then he has been the whole time. So the... He doesn't understand the history of this, yeah? He doesn't... If you were to ask him to go back to 1953 and talk about everything that's happened since, you'd just get a blank... That same look, actually, that you gave at CPAC to everybody else is what he'd give you.
That's my resting face.
Yeah. So what's the thing? Well, the thing is, he blew up the JCPOA, didn't he?
Just to remind people, this is the deal, the Obama-era deal, that we, the Europeans, also helped negotiate with the Iranians, which was a deal where they agreed to suspend their nuclear program in exchange for, you know, lifting of sanctions and other things.
Okay. Now, the JCPOA, so that was predicated on nuclear material, and in response to them getting rid of it, they had access to the economic world, sanctions were lifted, they could start trading in oil, etc., etc. That's gone now. There is no way for us now, because that deal has gone, because the nuclear fissionable material has been depleted, it's in a completely different situation now. What's the only leverage they have left? The only leverage they have left is controlling the geography of the area. They, let's face it, do not care about their own civilians. They've proved that time and time again, that civilian casualties, economic destruction, isn't something that regime really minds. They'll do it themselves if they have to in certain times. So what we've got is we've got a rock and a hard place. Mm. A regime that is only going to try and exercise economic leverage over the Strait of Hormuz to keep it controlled, toll paid for, so that they can make money. They can sell their oil, nobody else can. That's their position. They've made that very clear. They made that in response to Trump's rant. Like, this is what the line is. You've then got the American regime, which doesn't understand any of the history, doesn't understand the propaganda that's been pumped out of Iran for 40 years about how the West terrorized them and persecute them. They don't understand this entire situation. And so, can he be impeached? Can he be taken out? I don't think there is anything at the moment that is going to stop this outside of him being impeached. And it is truly terrifying to people who actually understand this.
You know what worries me, Ash, is that I just think, I mean, I think this has been clear for a few weeks now, but I think we've finally reached the fork in the road. You know, I think it was quite clear from quite early doors, as soon as it became obvious that regime change wasn't going to happen, or at least it wasn't going to happen quickly or easily. And whatever Trump says about regime change, you know, he says that he's affected at regime change already. Obviously, it's complete nonsense. He's replaced a 86-year-old man with his son, you know, a man for whom nature's scythe was probably going to swing, you know, sooner or later. Anyway, hasn't had regime change. And as soon as that became obvious, it seemed that there were only two choices available to Trump, or at least that choice was going to come before him. Either he does what he always does when something's gone wrong, declare victory and go away, although that probably isn't that available to him because he can't actually convince the Iranians to stop, right? It takes two to tango. Or, which I think is basically the point that we're at, he has to go bigger and harder and amplify the attacks. And I think to try and eke out a victory, he keeps rolling the dice and keeps doing it. And each time, actually, the whole situation continues to slip through his fingers. And I think that's the point now of decision that we're now at.
That's it. And the lever, or the fulcrum, if you want, is the Straits. And that's why I keep ringing in about it, because that's my area. I'm a merchant seafarer, and that's my focus.
Mm.
But the reason it is so important, it is because it is the only lever they had left in Iran.
Yes.
They had the nuclear fissionable material. They had the, you know, some leverage there to sort of say, right, well, we'll decrease that, get access to the market, and we'll keep the Strait open. They don't have that anymore. Their only lever is to do this, and they kind of don't care about the consequences.
Well, the point is, isn't it, Ash, is that you've basically got two different sides of the war, and one of them has both a more basic objective and also has a higher threshold to pain. And that's Iran. Basically, all Iran needs to do now is survive, and it is willing to sacrifice everything else and put everything else on the table in order to survive. The Americans cannot be in that position, and the Gulf states around them can't be in that position. And also, frankly, they have realized that their threshold for pain is greater than ours. And all they need to do is keep their foot on our economic throat via the Straits, as you've identified. And basically, that is basically as powerful as any weapon in certainly the conventional part of the American military arsenal.
Correct. So geography is their weapon. And that's why the impeachment is so important. I'm trying to frame this for myself as much as anyone, but that's why impeachment is so important, because he cannot afford this time to back down. There is nobody going to mop up the mess. He can't phone his dad anymore to pay for it. He can't get Michael Cohen to pay to make it all
go
away.
Can't get the Europeans to clear it up, despite the fact that's what he's asked for.
Precisely. He's tried every way that he normally uses to get this thing. So, you know, is he any more crazy than he was? No. He's actually as rational as he has always been in that he is crazy. It's just that none of the normal things that he's tried have worked.
Well, and also, just briefly, because I've got to go to the news, but briefly, the other thing it seems to me, I've always thought that Trump's MO, right, his kind of, his analysis of what's wrong with America, certainly in the world, is that basically, his view is America is all-powerful, and previous American presidents have, for whatever reason, in his mind, because they're cowards, chosen not to fully utilise the power that is available to them. And that takes the form of, you know, why haven't they had more tariffs, or why haven't they used American military power in a more muscular fashion, or whatever it happens to be. And it is true that any given American president could sort of leverage the extra 10 or 20% of power that they have. But previous American presidents haven't done that because they know two things. One, that there is a long-term cost often to using that kind of maximum version of American power, but also because there are consequences. And I think what Trump has always suffered, the illusion he's always had, is that he overestimates, actually, American power. And he thinks that American power can do anything. And what he's learning in the Gulf right now is even American power is not omnipotent. Final 10 seconds on this from you, Ash.
Yeah, well, all of that could have been solved by going to the Obama Library and reading a book.
Yeah, but you'd have to be able to read. Ash in Northampton there, grateful to you. We're going to move to a very different story now, but one that's causing almost as much political chaos, certainly in this country. Kanye West, who now goes by Ye, has been announced as the headline act for all three nights of London's Wireless Festival this July. His first UK performance in 11 years. Last May, he, of course, released a song, Mr. West, called Heil Hitler, to mark the 80th anniversary of the defeat of Nazi Germany. Australia cancelled his visit over it, but now he's due to headline in Finsbury Park. Keir Starmer says that it's deeply concerning. Pepsi, the festival's headline sponsor for over a decade, has pulled out. This morning, he himself said he'd be grateful to meet members of the Jewish community. So the question, should he be allowed in, and is banning him the right call, or does it make him a martyr?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Kanye West says he's willing to meet members of the UK's Jewish community after a backlash over his booking for Wireless Festival. The rapper says he wants to show that he's changed after making previously anti-Semitic remarks. The Wireless boss, Melvin Benn, says people should forgive the performer but admitted that the comments by Kanye West previously were abhorrent. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, told LBC this morning he thinks the booking should never have been made.
And as far as I can see, has done little to earn the forgiveness of Jewish people. It's not for me to forgive. I'm not Jewish. And I think forgiveness has to be earned. You have to repent and redeem yourself through action, not just words. We're far from that. He shouldn't be headlining the festival. And it seems to me that the organisers are putting money before morals, and I think that's a real shame.
West Streeting's also told LBC that resident doctors have been the standout winners of recent public sector pay rises. His comments come as tens of thousands of doctors start 6 days of strike action in England. Callum Parr is the chair of the BMA Resident Doctors Committee. He's told LBC despite receiving pay rises worth 33% over the last 4 years, doctors are being paid less than they were in 2008 because of inflationary measures.
We are not asking for 26% in one go. That has never been our request. We are willing to look over and number of years, but that has to make credible progress to restoring our pay back to what it was in 2008. So if you look at a doctor who did my exact job, so I'm currently working in intensive care, I've literally just come off night shifts over the weekend. A doctor doing that same job in 2008 was paid a fifth more than me. We don't think that that was acceptable.
The government has announced that interest rates on Plan 2 and 3 of student loans will be capped at a maximum of 6% from September. Graduates with Plan 2 loans currently pay interest rates based on the retail price index measure of inflation, plus up to 3% based on their earnings. Ministers have been under pressure in recent months over the system, with graduates raising concerns over increasing levels of debt. The Israeli military has told people in Iran to avoid trains and railway lines, warning of a risk to life. President Trump's deadline for Tehran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz expires later tonight. And schools in knife crime hotspots are to receive specialist training in an effort to divert children away from serious violence. £1.2 million of government funding is to be invested across England and Wales. 250 schools are to join the initiative as part of efforts to crack down on the issue. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 32 at 10,464. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry, warm and sunny day for much of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the west of Scotland with a high today of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Add more wahey to the day when you add more fun to your milk with Nesquik. Fortified with vitamin C and D, Nesquik is available in chocolate, strawberry and banana flavour. Nesquik, let's grow the fun.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11.04, with apologies to Mr. West. I've already been corrected by all of you that it is not in fact ye, but yay. So, Mr. Yay, Mr. West, whatever you want to be called, my apologies. Although I think it's fair to say it is as nothing by comparison to some of the things that you've come out with over the years. This is the controversy, as I was saying, about whether or not Kanye West should be allowed into the UK to headline a festival, given that only 10 months ago he was speaking in terms which, frankly, would make even, which are nothing short of far right and Nazi. Let's just go through some of the things that Kanye has said in terms of anti-Semitic incidents over the last few years. The record here is long, and frankly, it keeps getting worse. 2022, he tweeted he was going DEFCON 3 on Jewish people, and apologies as well for the language, but I think that, you know, it is worth hearing so we can have the full context on all of this. In 2022, he accused Sean Combs of being controlled by Jews, a classic conspiracy trope of secret Jewish power pulling all of the strings. In 2022, he told Alex Jones, himself an infamous conspiracy theorist, that he had a bit of a Hitler fetish. Let's take it up to date. February 2025, he posted on X, "I am a Nazi. Hitler was so fresh. And I don't like or trust any Jewish person." In the same month, during the Super Bowl, he ran an ad directing viewers to his fashion website, where the only item for sale was a white T-shirt with a black swastika emblazoned on the front for $20. In May 2025, he released a song, so not even a year ago, called Heil Hitler, to mark the 80th anniversary of the defeat of Nazi Germany. That is the incident which led to Australia to cancel his visa over it. And in January 2026, he took out a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal to apologise, blaming a brain injury and untreated bipolar disorder. It's a very simple question for you this hour. Should he be allowed into the country, having professed such profound anti-Semitic comments and remarks at a time when we have rising anti-Semitic hate crime in the United Kingdom, and be allowed literally to be platformed at one of the biggest music festivals in our country? Or should we accept his plea for forgiveness and redemption? Does he deserve it? So short a time, having committed these heinous acts and said these heinous things. 0345-6060-973, 0345-6060-973. Let's talk to Joseph Draper, LBC's reporter. He's in Finsbury Park, where the wireless festival at which Kanye West is due to headline will take place. Joseph, just give us the latest on what the festival itself has said about all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, Lewis, this is part of a long pattern, really, escalating pattern of anti-Semitic remarks, neo-Nazi remarks by Kanye West, of course, the American rapper, very popular historically, but increasingly very divisive as well. This came to a head last year when the 48-year-old musician released a song called Heil Hitler, advertised a swastika T-shirt for sale on his website. Because of that now, sponsors are pulling out of this festival, which is due to be held here in July. He was meant to be the headline act for 3 days. Pepsi has pulled out of that now, other sponsors are likely to pull out in the next few days. Jewish communities and charities as well putting huge pressure on the organisers to cancel his performance. The Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and the Board of Deputies included. They also, crucially, want the government to block his visa now as well. And MPs have been calling for that too, including Labour ones and the Shadow Home Secretary, Chris Philp, putting pressure, really, on the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, to use the power, which he says she already has under the Immigration Act, to cancel that visa. Now, it's understood ministers are reviewing his permission to enter the country. We've not had any confirmation yet on whether they plan to cancel his visa. Event organisers say, though, he's already been issued a visa in the last few days. So, you know, that raises questions about whether it will be more difficult now for the government to rescind it. The Prime Minister, for his part, has described this planned performance as deeply concerning. And here's Health Secretary Wes Streeting talking to LBC earlier today.
Well, I thought it was a terrible statement from the Wireless Festival overnight, which attempted to give Kanye West the fig leaf of credibility he doesn't deserve. He didn't make one or two off-colour remarks during a bipolar episode. He wrote, recorded and released a song called Heil Hitler, plastered it across T-shirts, has given a mealy-mouthed and self-serving apology, and as far as I can see, has done little to earn the forgiveness of Jewish people. It's not for me to forgive, I'm not Jewish. And I think forgiveness has to be earned. You have to repent and redeem yourself through action, not just words. We're far from that. He shouldn't be headlining the festival. And it seems to me that the organisers are putting money before morals, and I think that's a real shame.
Now, Kanye West has apologised for these comments. He took out a full-page advert in the Wall Street Journal to do so, dedicated, he said, to the ones I hurt, claiming he loves Jewish people, that his bipolar disorder, caused by a car crash 25 years ago, had led to a four-month-long, he said, manic episode, which had destroyed his life. And this morning, Lewis, he added to that, saying he wants to present a show here in Finsbury Park, Park of change, bringing unity, peace and love. And he offered to meet the Jewish community here in London as well. Now, the organisers, Festival Republic, also very much standing by their decision to book him. The director, Melvin Benn, describing West's comments as abhorrent, but encouraging people to forgive him and saying he has a legal right to enter the UK. Now, I've been speaking to some of the people living in this area, and they're not all convinced.
I think it's a complete disgrace, and he shouldn't be performing here. He's made anti-Semitic comments. I hope it doesn't go ahead, because I'd be extremely disappointed in Haring Gay and the organisers of Wireless.
What do you think it says about the organisers that they've booked him?
I just think it seems like they don't care about the Jewish community, and, they have no morals.
I can't believe they've got him performing here, to be honest, but yeah, we had a wee chat about it last night. There were some people that were going, oh, but yeah, his music's really great, but nah, he's not a very pleasant person, is he?
So, Lewis, huge pressure on Wireless to cancel that performance. That's likely to increase, I think, throughout the day and the next few days.
And Joseph, I suppose there is some precedent, because I suppose the question here and what we're going to be discussing is whether the state should basically be regulating who comes into the country on the basis of what they said, but there has been precedent in the past for musicians to be banned from the country or prohibited entry into the country on the basis of what they said. I must confess, I'm not entirely au fait with all of these acts, but someone called Tyler, the Creator, who I'm sure is an extremely important person, was banned from the UK in 2015 for 3 to 5 years because of the lyrics the Home Office deemed misogynistic and homophobic, and that ban wasn't lifted until 2019. So there is precedent for it.
Yeah, there is. I mean, the Shadow Home Secretary is really put pressure on the government to do that as well. He said ministers do have the power to ban foreign nationals from the UK. This is according to the law, if their presence is not considered conductive to the public good. I think the question here, Lewis, is whether the fact that he's already been given a visa over the last few days, according to the festival organisers, whether that complicates the process, makes it more difficult, I guess, for the government to rescind that, rather than simply stopping the visa process, before it started, really.
Joseph Draper there, reporting from Finsbury Park, where the Wireless Festival will take place. This, on one level, you might not think this is very complicated at all, and I would have a lot of sympathy, and I do have a lot of sympathy for that view, and I can completely understand why you might arrive at it. Kanye West has expressed views which are Nazi. I mean, he's literally praised Nazis. He's literally praised and adulated the chief Nazi, the main Nazi, Adolf Hitler. He did so not 10 years ago or 20 years ago or even 5 years ago. He did so 9 months ago on the 80th anniversary of Adolf Hitler's death and destruction of the Third Reich. This is something that as recently as May 2025, Kanye West decided to release a song called Heil Hitler to mark that anniversary. Australia, as I say, cancelled his visit over it. I can completely understand and, as I say, have some intrinsic sympathy with the idea that, you know what, people who praise Nazis, who try and make some sort of commercial benefit off the back of Nazism, who have a history of anti-Semitic comments just at the moment when we ourselves in this country are suffering from a scourge in the, of anti-Semitic hate crime incidents, let's just not let them in. It's not a problem that we need. Totally understand why you might think that. And if that is what you think, want to hear from you, 0345 6060 973, especially if you're Jewish yourself, especially interested in hearing your views. The counter case, which the instinctive liberal in me does have burning inside me, and which just gives me just a little bit of pause on these matters, is whether it is or not that the state should be the one deciding who gets to speak on British soil. Whether the Home Office, the Home Secretary, any particular Home Secretary should be deciding, based on the content of someone's views, should be setting a precedent for allowing someone into the country. Now, there is precedent for it. I mean, we did it with Geert Wilders, for example, the Dutch far-right leader, has previously been a minister in the Dutch government. As I say, there's precedent for it with musicians as well. But there is just a little reflex, a little voice in the back of my head that makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable with the state, the libertarian in me, the state deciding who gets to come in on the basis of what they've said, especially at a moment or a time when, however vacuous we might think it is, however hollow or shallow we might think it is, he has said that he regrets what he said and asked for redemption and grace. Something, and it's not for me to give that redemption and grace, it would be for British Jews to do so, but something that, generally speaking, you know, I think we need more of in our politics. There is potentially a better answer to hateful speech, and the argument would run, and I want you to tell me why I'm wrong, by the way. But it's not silence, and it's not banning, and it's not making someone like that a martyr, which banning him from the country will do for parts of the population. It is exposure, and it's counter-speech. Let him come. Let him come. Let journalists, let Jewish community leaders, he's offered to meet with them, put to him on camera why he was wrong and why what he said caused such gross offence, and it does more than offence. It leads to a climate where Jewish people in this country are increasingly feeling unsafe. Banning him, by contrast, banning him, I think, you know, there is an argument to say, hands him a narrative of persecution and arguably might amplify his reach even further beyond what Three Nights in Finsbury Park ever could. So to ban or not to ban Kanye West? 0345-6060-973. 0345-6060-973. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this week here on LBC. The time is 11:16.
This is LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve it.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7. Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Time is 11:18. We're asking whether or not Kanye West should be allowed in to the country on the basis of his clearly anti-Semitic past, and indeed Nazi past, on the basis of what he said. I do see some people saying, Lewis, why are you talking about this and not talking about Islamophobia? I hate this sort of whataboutery, I really do. We're talking about anti-Semitic attacks because that is what Kanye West is guilty of in terms of the rhetoric that he's employed and the fact that there are profound problems around anti-Semitic attacks in this country at the moment. That does not negate from or distract from what is happening in terms of anti-Muslim hatred, Islamophobia, whatever you want to call it. I've reported on that many, many times. I was reporting it on CPAC in Dallas only a week or so ago. But to report about one and talk about one is not to negate the other. In fact, they're two sides of the same hateful coin. Sue is in Pinner. What do you have to think about this, Sue? Do you think Kanye West should be banned from entering the country? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all.
I don't know that it's about the banning. I think the issue is that he's been invited to play at a festival.
Yes.
I think my point would be this. So if this was about another community, let's say the Muslim community, there was a teacher, I think it was up north, who had the temerity to either say Muhammad or draw a picture in a lesson from an educational point, that teacher is still in hiding. He lost his job. He lost his house. And I want to know how much more we in the Jewish community have to take. It just seems to me that we don't count. We're not frightened. My husband and I are very proud Jews, and I'm not frightened. My father and my grandfather fought for this country. But I just feel that we are completely unsupported. Why would you invite a man with such vile views to play at a concert? And who do you think is going to attend this concert? It's not going to be Jewish people. It's going to be young people who have a similar view. And I think it's frightening.
I suppose, I mean, I think that's an interesting point. So, I mean, so your point is that, in a way, the state, the question of whether the state should prohibit his entry is almost too late. Your view is that he shouldn't have been invited in the first place, and it reveals a kind of insouciance, a blasé kind of attitude towards anti-Semitism that he was invited by the organisers of the festival. Oh, I think we may have lost Sue.
That said, death to the IDF and et cetera, et cetera.
Sorry, just repeat that, Sue, because we lost you for a second. Just repeat that last
point.
Sorry,
yes, of course. I think there's been examples of this which have been stopped. So the group that said death to the IDF, Bob Villain, I think his name is.
Yes,
you know, the number of insults we take in this country, people who, as far as I'm concerned, are British, is not acceptable, and we're not supported. So if it was a Muslim thing, I know that there would be riots. There would be the Muslim people would be up in arms. That's not our way. That's not our way. If we're going to protest, it's going to be done quietly. It's going to be done decently. There is two-tier policing in this country.
Well, I mean, I suppose you could argue. I don't want to engage in the sort of whataboutery. I mean, you could say that I think what there certainly is. I mean, prejudice takes lots of different forms. I mean, I hear from leading politicians in this country a certain base level of prejudice against Muslims that we would not hear from about Jews, and rightly so. So, I mean, you know, these things manifest themselves differently, and they're all evil, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I mean, I don't think that helps anybody, this divisive attitude. But, you know, when you support, or you say you support, in a song, Hitler, who should any decent, right-minded person should understand is appalling, and then to sell a T-shirt that just says that this man has very dubious views, and that should be enough not to invite him.
What do you make of the arguments? So just briefly, I mean, he has cited his mental health problems, including untreated bipolar disorder. Does that carry any weight with you?
Well, I would say that Hitler's probably mad. I think Putin's unbalanced. That doesn't mean you'd invite them into the country. It's not acceptable. And I also think he's done this because now he's losing money, his career is in difficulties, and he's thinking, well, I better just, you know, make reparation. And can I just say, it's not for anybody else, in my view, other than the Jewish people, to forgive. And I don't forgive. I don't think he should have said it, and I think it's his true belief.
All right, Sue, grateful to you. Of course, should say that being bipolar is not an example of being mad. It is a mental disorder, but I think we understood the thrust of what Sue was saying. Sebastian is in Kingston. Good morning, Sebastian. What do you have to say about this?
Good morning. I think that what Kanye West said is more the shock factor. And I think he builds his like personality off controversy and people talking about him. And this is just giving him more to build off. So I don't think he meant it. Not, I'm not saying that it's obviously not forgivable and it is disgusting what he said, but I wouldn't say they're direct threats to the Jewish community. I think there are much more like systemic anti-Semitism going on, and people who are who do pose a much bigger threat to Jews in this country coming into the country other than him.
So, what do you say to the argument, Sebastian, that ultimately, though, if we allow someone like that with such a recent history of those of you, because we're not talking about something, you know, 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, we're talking like literally 9 months ago, that it sends a message that basically the British state thinks those sorts of really extreme views are acceptable and okay, and that contributes to an atmosphere where violence is more likely?
Well, I think the organiser of Wireless said he's not coming to share his political views, he's coming to perform. No. But obviously, the fact he said that obviously is controversial and would offend some people. But again, not everyone has to go and listen to him. He's not performing for the country, it's not like Glastonbury where he's going to be broadcasted across the world. I don't think it will be particularly broadcasted across TV, will it? But it's very select. If you don't want to go see him, you don't have
My worry, Sebastian, is more that, and I completely understand we were hearing there from Sue, and I completely understand, if you're Jewish, why you'd feel so passionately about it. Why, if you're not Jewish, you'd feel passionately about it. You think the guy shouldn't be allowed in the country. My only slight, as I say, my reflex or my slight worry is that it's a very easy thing to start banning people from the country as a result of what they've most recently said. It has happened before. It wouldn't be completely without precedent. But for example, I mean, you know, if Elon Musk wanted to visit the country, he wouldn't object, would we, to his visiting the country? I mean, this is a guy, and yet this is a guy. I mean, he's addressed a rally for Germany's far-right AfD. He's talked about, you know, he's accused of being a Nazi salute, something that he disputes, but nonetheless, he's been accused of that. In September 2024, he shared a video clip arguing that millions of Jews died in the Holocaust, not because of Nazi intent to exterminate them, but because Hitler had no plan for housing prisoners. He commented, "Very interesting, worth watching." He later deleted it. And there's endless examples in our political environment at the moment of people like that. So where does it start and where does it end?
Well, Kanye West isn't tweeting them because I don't believe he genuinely believes that. Well, a lot of people like Tommy Robinson or some far-right extremists, you genuinely believe, and full of hatred and despise towards communities. I don't think Kanye West he didn't share hate in terms of his followers aren't following him because of the stuff he says. It's more...
Oh, I mean, he did. I mean, to be fair, I mean, he has shared hate, Sebastian.
That was a bad way of putting it. Yeah. He didn't share hate in terms of he genuinely believes that, and he genuinely...
Well, how do we know that? I mean, he said, "I'm a Nazi, and I don't like or trust any Jewish person." He said that in February 2025. I mean, we can't look inside the man's mind. We have to take his words at face value, don't we?
Yeah, I agree. So, it's about what you believe of him, but going back to you saying about banning people from the country, surely we should ban anyone who said anything extremist or anything that would offend communities at that point.
All right, Sebastian in Kingston there. Meryl is in Dorking, who I think has something to say on the stronger end of this. Meryl, good morning.
Right, well, actually, I think this is such an opportunity for our country.
Go on.
Because we can take this visa away and we can say, in this country, the standards are such that anybody in this country is protected from hate speech, and prejudice, whatever ethnicity, whatever gender, whatever. We have standards. And if people express these views and this hatred, then they forfeit the right to actually perform on our platforms in this country. And it's not like Elon Musk. This guy is being promoted across the world. He has lapping up this publicity. He's being talked about on your program, on media, social media. He's lapping all this up. And what it's representing is hate crime. And so what we must do as British people in our proudly diverse, tolerant country, which is what we all aspire to be, if we want to say to the world, we're not having this, we're not having people who say these things and make excuses excuses. And, you know, we've just had three ambulances set fire in the Jewish community. We've got to set the standard. And if his mealy mouth go, oh, well, he didn't mean it, he's ill, then, you know, no, you don't. It's zero tolerance. I'm sorry, Kane, if that's what you've said. We've got other entertainers that could be our platforms, and you're just not welcome.
Would it not? I mean, I hear what you're saying, Marilyn. I hear also what you're saying about his desire for publicity. If he were banned, would it not provide him with even more publicity and a sense of persecution and martyrdom about which he would exploit and which would generate sympathy for him, as opposed to bringing him to the country and journalists like me and others can sit and talk to him and ask him about his views? Jewish leaders, he's offered to meet with Jewish leaders. Jewish leaders can meet him and put him right. Would that not be better?
Why would Jewish people, how dare that man say, oh, I'll go and talk to them? In fact, no, it's opposite. We want the publicity, but the publicity is, as a country, we have standards. I'm afraid that we will not tolerate this sort of hatred, this sort of past. And therefore, he's welcome to come and visit London if he wants, but he's not going to have a platform and where he can influence young people.
But that's
where we welcome
him. But wait a minute. But I mean, the state, we've got precedent for the state banning people from the country, but we don't want to get into a situation, do we, when the state is telling concert organisers who and who not that they can put on once they're already in the country? That's taking us down a dark path, isn't it?
I'm afraid you have to because.
And would we apply that to all races and all religions, or is it just right?
Absolutely.
And we think that the Home Secretary should have that faculty and that power.
Yes. No. I think she should say yes. I think Keir Starmer has actually put his neck out there and said that he wants all Jewish people to feel safe. And remember, this is a background of increasing intolerance and people afraid of these sort of attitudes. So what you've got to do, you've got to stand up and say, this is why he's not allowed to front these concerts. It's because we're standing up for people's rights to be tolerated. And I mean, if somebody was headlining who had history of attacking black people and rappers and saying, you know, that whatever they're attacked, then in fact, I'd say exactly the same. They're not welcome. So this guy, and from what he said, very publicly, has to be made an example of, I'm afraid.
Marilyn,
he's not welcome.
Marilyn Dorking there. Well, after the news, we're going to be speaking to consultant psychiatrist Dr. Samir Johar. He'll speak to us about the effect a bipolar disorder can have on behaviour. That is, of course, what Kanye West has cited as one of the contributing factors to his previous comments and statements, which are without doubt are Nazi and anti-Semitic. That is coming up at 11:31. Let's get the latest LBC News headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Kanye West says he's willing to meet Jewish leaders in the UK after a fierce backlash over his booking for Wireless Festival. The rapper says he wants to show that he's changed after previously making anti-Semitic remarks. It's understood at least two people have been killed after a shooting near the Israeli consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul. Gunfire has been reported this morning with a large police presence understood to be in the north of the city. And the government says it'll cap interest rates on Plan 2 and 3 student loans at 6% from September. Ministers have been under pressure to look at the system after concerns from graduates over spiralling levels of debt. LBC weather, a dry, warm and sunny day for much of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain for the west of Scotland, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs, and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot will have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's draw. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Rules apply, 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You, the daddy of air conditioning. For over 15 years, Cool You have specialised in installing our fully internal aircon systems throughout London with no mess, no fuss and no external condenser. And from April the 10th to the 19th, come and meet me and the team at the Ideal Home Show, London Olympia. Daddy Cool. Cool You for a cool, comfortable home.
Leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 11:34. Again, I completely understand the passion about this debate, and I completely understand if you're Jewish or even if you're not. As I've said myself, the comments that Kanye West has made are appalling and egregious, and, well, they're Nazi comments. There's no doubt about it. The question is what the whether or not he should be allowed in the country, and then whether or not he should be allowed to perform. And my worry, my concern, as ever, about the state deciding about who comes into the country on the basis of what they've said or not, which is not completely without precedent, but is, as I say, that it potentially amplifies their message, as opposed to being allowed into the country and being put right and not being made a martyr for what they're saying. And I note in particular, just gently say, you know, we hear a lot of people say and argue against, for example, the police going after people for hateful tweets and whatever, who seem particularly keen to make sure that Kanye West does not come into the country. Is it not one or the other? You either believe there are, of course, always going to be some limits on freedom of speech and freedom of expression. There's a question of where the line is to be drawn. But really, once you've accepted that a line is to be drawn with regards to tweets and so on, then why not for Mr. West? And something that he has talked about, of course, and offered as a means of a sort of exculpatory, an excuse for his actions, is the fact that he says that he has had untreated bipolar disorder. Well, let's talk now to Dr. Samir Johar, Clinical Associate Professor and Consultant Psychiatrist at Imperial College London. Dr. Johar, thanks so much for joining us on the show this morning. I'm not going to ask, and I'm sure even if I did, you would not indulge me by seeking to diagnose Kanye West, of course. But just talking in general, is it true what he says? Could it be that an untreated bipolar disorder could lead to saying things such as this? Good morning.
You're entirely right. I can never, no doctor is smart enough or would ever wish to comment on someone secondhand. That would be wrong. What I can comment on is the nature of bipolar illness and psychosis. And what do we know from the evidence? We know in about 50 to two-thirds of people with bipolar, when they have an episode of illness, you can develop psychotic symptoms. Now, what are psychotic symptoms? I guess it's a change in our behaviour, our emotions and our thinking. So thinking things are happening that might not be happening. So feeling persecuted, for example, or hallucinations or other types of psychotic symptoms that you tend to see in people with other psychotic illnesses. So your question, as I understand it, is can psychosis exist in people who develop bipolar? Yes. And when we have, say, someone's having a manic episode, which will last for months, over half of people with a manic episode will develop psychotic symptoms.
And of course, we should say that his record with regard to expressing anti-Semitic attacks or anti-Semitic language, I mean, it goes back some years. Again, without talking about him in particular, is it possible or likely, particularly for a man of considerable means such as himself, he certainly would be able to afford to pay for medical care, Can a bipolar disorder go that long without being diagnosed and therefore untreated?
Again, that's a great question. And work we do with the charity Bipolar UK, and they did the commission, there's a delay in diagnosis of about 9.5 years for people. So from first presenting with symptoms to having a diagnosis of bipolar is generally upwards of 8 years for people. And we know that from the evidence. There's systematic reviews and meta-analyses on that. So to answer your question, as I understand it, is there a delay between getting symptoms and a diagnosis of the illness? Yes. And the evidence is pretty categorical in that regard.
We've obviously talked, of late, there's been a discussion. I mean, we saw it with what happened with John Davidson and Tourette syndrome. And obviously that's a very different disorder and a very different disease. People saying things that they might not want to say and or definitely don't want to say in his case. And then society perhaps not treating it with the kindness that it deserves. This is obviously different. It's a different sort of disorder, bipolar, and it is certainly something that I think, you know, judging from the reaction on this show so far, not many people are willing to entertain. Bipolar itself, it seems to me, though, is a disease a bit like Tourette's, which I think is largely misunderstood. Is that fair to say?
You're a very smart man. Yes, it is. It is because I guess the prevalence, it's up to 4% of the population, so we might not all meet someone who has bipolar and fully understand it. And that's just the nature of mental illness, isn't it? And what we try and do is, I guess, increase people's education about what the symptoms are, how it affects the person and their family.
So again, and I'm not asking you to sort of give any diagnosis here or to say with any certainty whether it's the case. I'm just asking, just in general, is it possible, and people might not believe this for sure, but is it, just speaking generally, is it possible that the things that Kanye West has said, that bipolar could at least be part of the context, and it is credible and possible that that is a contributing factor to what he has said, and therefore to some extent be exculpatory?
I guess what I can see is, can people develop psychotic symptoms, and can they develop irritability, impulsivity in the context of mania? Yes, they can. And in the context of illness, one can develop beliefs that are out of keeping with reality. We will also see risky behavior in people, unfortunately, when they're manic, which is why it's a medical emergency. So you'll see people acting impulsively and making risky decisions. So those are known phenomena that can occur when someone does have mania. And I'm very grateful to you for not putting me on the spot in an individual. So all I can say is that we recognize these phenomena in people, and one would hope that someone's received good psychiatric care and people close to them make sure that they don't do anything that they shouldn't be doing.
That's Dr. Samir Johar there, Clinical Associate Professor and Consultant Psychiatrist at Imperial College London. And again, he's not talking about Kanye West in the particular. Any good doctor, as he said, would not do that, and we're not either. But I think it is important, given that bipolar has been raised, to just try and get a little bit of an understanding about what it is and how it might affect someone. But by the way, of course, even if you were to accept, which I'm sure many of you and many people wouldn't, that bipolar is a contributing factor here, it doesn't mean that he should be allowed to perform in the country, and it doesn't mean that anybody ought to or needs to accept his apology, particularly given how little time that has been since he said these remarks and has now come out with this justification for it. Let's speak to Morris, who is in Fulham. What do you think? Should he be allowed to perform, Morris? Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Clear as a whistle.
Lovely, lovely. Thanks for letting me speak. Just very quickly, so I'm just going to lay out qualifications first. I used to be a Kanye fan. Got the album in 2004, the College Dropout album. Then the late registration came out in the year after. Then Graduation. Then 808 and Brap. You know, I can go on. Super fan. But in my view, I'll ban him from performing, and I'll explain why just very quickly. I think about 6 or 7 years ago, Kanye West came out and said that slavery was a choice, that black people, Africans, chose to remain in slavery for 400 years.
Yeah.
And now he's come up with this about Jewish people and hailed the figurehead of hatred in my view, in human history. I think Kanye's gone too far. He's gone too far now. I think he should be banned from performing.
Should the state, though, Morris, should the state be the one, because that's what we're talking about here, should it be up to the Home Secretary of the day to use their judgments to decide whether or not someone is allowed into the country on the basis of things they've said, and also should be allowed to perform in the country on the basis of what they've said, especially if they've said, and we might choose whether to believe them or not on this, especially when they say that they regret what they've said.
I'll put it like this. So as a black man living in this black skin, I look at it from a different lens. My view is, if the Nazis would hurt Jews that had lived in Europe for, say, 1,000 years, what would they do to me, someone of African descent that moved to Europe in, you know, in the last 75 years of the Windrush, generation? You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So I think the state has a role to play here to say, look, in this space, if you do certain things, you've got no right to be around us. You've got to make decent and sincere changes before you're allowed into our space. I think the state's got a hand to play here, absolutely.
But let's imagine if, I don't know, we had a political actor from the United States. And we don't have to imagine this very hard, because, you know, there are lots of political actors at the moment in the United States, senior ones, who express, you know, very virulent anti-Muslim sentiment. And let's imagine that they had expressed that, and that they then said that they regretted it, or even if they said that they didn't regret it. Should the British government be in a position where it says, actually, you know what, each time we get someone who said something deeply political or even hateful, that they say, actually, you're not allowed to come into the country? Is that not a test for liberalism? Because ultimately, liberalism, libertarianism, believing in freedom of speech, sometimes it is going to involve us allowing people to say things that not only do we do not like, but that we abhor.
Yes, I see what you mean. But my position in this is that you can say whatever you like, and you're allowed to do that, and we're also allowed to challenge what you're saying.
Yeah.
But you cannot hail one that's murdered millions of lives. And, you know, let's not forget the Blitz. British people died as well. Kanye West hailed this man.
Yeah.
You know, so you see what I mean?
And we should also say as well, Morris, that just because, I mean, you know, he has bipolar, for which, of course, we would have sympathy as a mental health disorder. But there are lots of people with bipolar out there, and it doesn't lead to them automatically being anti-Semitic.
And it's an insult to people with bipolar, you know, to say that you're that way inclined because you're bipolar. Do you see what I mean? It's a serious one. On this one, I think Kanye's on the wrong. Absolutely.
Morris in Fulham, grateful to you. After 12 o'clock, there's a bit of breaking news. We're going to be talking about the fact that the government has announced, as we heard in the bulletin at 11:30, that interest rates on Plan 2 and 3 student loans are to be capped at 6%. This is obviously in response to the deserved political furore there has been around this question of student loans. We're going to be talking about that. Can also see as well that we can see breaking news from Turkey, the Istanbul governor there referring to or talking about reports of 3 killed in a shooting near the Israeli consulate in Istanbul. 3 people reportedly killed in a shooting. According to Turkish media, 2 police officers also have said to have been injured. No official confirmation of casualties yet. Details of the incident are still emerging. We will give you, of course, bring you the latest on that as soon as we have it. We're going to continue this conversation before we get to student loans about whether or not Kanye West should be allowed into the country, and secondarily, whether he should be allowed to perform given his past history of Nazi. Yes, Nazi comments. 0345 6060973. Time 11:47.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What do you got planned for this summer? Fancy listening to a supposedly former anti-Semite who actually composed and wrote a song about Hitler and sold swastikas on his T-shirts? If you call that a good day, you want to go to the Wireless Festival. That's where you'll find yourself, because Kanye West will be there. He wrote the song Heil Hitler. This is a pattern of behaviour. This is not a one-off incident. There's growing calls now for the minister to ban him from the country. Melvin Benn, who is the Festival Republic's managing director, said that he's coming here to perform, not to extol any political dogma. Well, if Vladimir Putin was to play the balalaika, are we going to put him on Saturday night at the London Palladium? No, of course we're not.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK. So we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Oh, you want weight loss advice?
Weight loss? Actually, what you want to do...
I got my weight loss secret from my mother, who got it from her mother's...
My tip is...
Weight loss?
I... No, forget that. No, you just
keep dancing.
Dragon fruit.
Podcast.
Advice.
Or you could go to MedExpress. MedExpress. Healthcare without the noise. Go to medexpress.co.uk/weightloss.
Ali 60 milligram hard capsules contain orlistat for overweight adults with a BMI of 28 plus. Follow a reduced calorie, low fat diet. Always read the label.
Here's a bright idea. Let Wix see how much you could save on your electricity bills. With Wix Solar, our team handles everything under the sun, from design to the perfect installation of your solar panels. We're proud as a peacock to be rated excellent on Trustpilot, so you can feel confident your solar installation is in safe hands. Book your free solar appointment today at wix.co.uk. Wix Solar, a name you can trust with service you can rely on.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11:50. Again, just going to set out the liberal case, what would be the classical liberal case for allowing Kanye West in. It is really uncomfortable and awkward, but principles often are, right? The principle, going all the way back to John Stuart Mill, when talking about liberalism and liberty, you don't ban people for offensive views, you ban them for harm. However ugly what he said is, and my word, it is ugly, it is grotesque, it's disgusting. The test in a free society has to be, not is this disgusting, is does this incite violence? Now, you might tell me that it does, and I can see an argument to say that it does. But if you start excluding people for disgusting, abhorrent, appalling speech, and you tell them that they can't perform, then where does it stop? Who decides what's unacceptable next time? What if you have a very different sort of government banning very different sorts of people? And there is a harder truth, which I think, as a liberal, I believe in, which is that bad ideas, bad language, disgusting ideas such as that which Kanye West has espoused should be interrogated and exposed rather than suppressed. Let him speak, or let him be challenged, let him be dismissed, let him be exposed for who and what he is and for the vacuosity and how abhorrent his views are. But if you don't let him in, and I think at this point, you risk making him a martyr. Allowing him in is not endorsing what he has to say. A liberal society tolerates things that it hates. That is the point. That is the hallmark, the litmus test of a liberal society. However, I think what would have been far better is for him not to have been invited by these organisers in the first place, who should have recognised just how appalling his views are and why he doesn't have and shouldn't be expected to be performing at a festival like that. But once the invitation's gone out, I think it becomes murkier, because then the state gets involved. Ollie is in St. Albans. Ollie, good morning.
Right, so just for a little bit of context, I'm 20, I enjoyed some of Kanye's older songs. I think he was a great artist many, many years ago, and I've seen how he's kind of descended into this state that he is in now. And I think people have kind of forgotten that he is not the person solely responsible for the way he's been acting. He's, for example, for the Hitler song, I mean, he had a whole produced music video with people behind him. And I think he's obviously mentally ill. He's obviously unstable. Things he's put out on Twitter are absolutely ridiculous. And I think people should be able to realize how unserious it is. You know, I think people shouldn't, as you said, people should be able to interrogate it and dismiss it if they want to, but not suppress it, as you said. I totally agree. And I think that, I also think that on the bipolar thing, I mean, conspiracies and hallucinations, as the guy said, you know, unfortunately, Jews are surrounded by conspiracy theories. And, you know, I think it's not understandable, but it's almost expected that people would, if they are suffering from delusions and things, will jump onto that conspiracy bandwagon.
Well, yes, although I suppose plenty of people, Ollie, the argument is plenty of people who have bipolar disease don't turn out to say things like Hitler was right or, you know, celebrate Adolf Hitler.
I think everyone has a different expression of a mental disorder. I think you can't compare anyone else to anyone else. And, you know, where Kanye has gone one way, someone else has gone the other. It's a manic episode.
I suppose people listening would say that it all seems a bit convenient.
I'm sure it does, but I think there's bigger fish to fry when it comes to Kanye. I don't think he's the most dangerous man out there. And as you said about Elon Musk saying similarly terrible things, similarly hateful things, but because of his position, he's able to get away with it more. I think one is just, you know, he's a figure who's very divisive, been divisive for a long time. And I think people in his apparent corner are just trying to make some money out of him because he's a big name and they're trying to make him as provocative as possible. And I think he clearly has had some problems with drugs, mental health issues, and I think he's actually quite tragic. I think he's very tragic.
I mean, my worry, Ollie, is that actually you just, as always when people are suppressed in some way, you just make them into a martyred figure. We've seen that happen with political figures who are on the far right now who are almost commonplace in our country. And part of the reason for that is they're able to spin out a yarn and a shtick that the whole world is out to get them.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally agree. And I think it does more harm than good having the state jump in and ban him. I definitely condemn the wireless organisers for allowing it to come in. And
yes.
I mean, I'd rather he wasn't there, but if the state steps in, I think that sets a dangerous precedent. I just think Kanye, you know, I'm a Jewish guy, and I've seen the tweets he used to put out in his episodes. I just laughed at them. And I think anyone who doesn't laugh at them or takes them seriously can be so easily picked apart by simple critical thinking.
Ollie, in St. Albans, grateful to you. Jordan is in Edinburgh. Jordan, good morning. What do you think about this? Should he be allowed in and allowed to play? Yes or no?
Hi, good morning. I don't think he should play, but I don't know if I would put the position to the state. My ideal would have been that the invitation was never sent, but the state intervening, there's already an artist who I'm also a fan of. Sorry, I was a Kanye West fan for a huge one for like the last 8 years of my life, really. Similar to your other callers, I've listened to like 10 of his albums. Another artist, an American artist who I enjoy a lot, Tyler, the Creator, was banned back in, I think, 2012-ish. And in that context, I don't know if you remember the case, he was writing lyrics that were very much horrorcore, very much kind of in that vein of Eminem, trying to shock people. But in that context, he was a 20-year-old from the suburbs. I don't think banning in that case worked out in the long term. He's no longer banned from the UK. I don't really think it would work out in the case of Kanye either, because whether it would make him into a martyr figure, whether it would embolden him further, I don't know. I just don't think it's really the state's position.
Do you understand, Jordan, why some people listening to this might say, particularly Jewish people, that they are in an environment now, and we see this with attacks on synagogues and so on, where anti-Semitism is getting worse and political and anti-Semitic attacks, I won't call them political attacks because they're not, attacks on hate-filled attacks on Jewish people is a problem which is getting worse. And in that context, having a man who has said the things that he said and the British government allowing them in, why that act scares them and it will think that it basically almost legitimizes those sorts of views.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think he should perform at all because what he said was horrible. And putting it in my context of if something happened to me where I had lost my mental facility and I gained it later and I heard that I had said what Kanye has said, I would be absolutely mortified and I would want to do a lot more than he's seemingly done so far to try and apologize for my actions. I guess my problem at this point is just whether it's the state, whether it's a useful thing for the state to do.
Yeah.
If it was going to have a positive effect, I think the state should. But I'm questioning on whether the state would really
understood.
Impact.
But. Jordan, grateful to you. I want to get Leah from Telford in before we go, though, and go to the news. Leah, last word on this, I think, to you. Morning.
Hi, morning. I remember a while ago watching Alex Jones and Kanye doing a show together and thinking even Alex Jones looked nervous. And I remember thinking, I obviously uneducated on psychology or anything, but I'm not a doctor, but thinking Kanye didn't seem mentally well. And I think my question in all of this is, where are family members, friends, where are agents? I think they are the ones that hold responsibility, knowing that he is mentally unwell, probably has bipolar. I think they have a lot to really be responsible in what he does.
Do you understand, Leah, why some people might listening to this might find it all terribly convenient?
Oh, of course, absolutely. I mean, I personally do believe the explanation that it was a manic episode. Of course, like I said, though,
very long term
doctor. Yeah, absolutely. And as I say, I'm not a doctor, and I completely understand people saying that no, that's no excuse. But as somebody who has had some mental illness in the past, and whose family members have, and even though what he has said is absolutely disgusting, I do tend to err on the side of understanding that even a most normal person can say some truly terrible things when they're not themselves. And I'm not saying that Kanye is an amazing person, but I think that's to bear in mind that people do act differently.
Yes, Leah in Telford, grateful to you. I think it's fair to say that it's a very long-term pattern of saying heinous and appalling things, so it would be taking a lot for people to forgive him something that he has asked for, but that is for the Jewish community to decide. We're going to move on now. Interest rates top four. Student loans on plan 2 and 3 loans will be capped at 6% from September. The government has announced that in the last half an hour to an hour or so. Decision comes after mounting criticism of the student loan system, with many graduates seeing their debts grow to more than they ever borrowed or could possibly repay due to high interest rates. Question quite simple for the next hour of the show. Is that enough, or is it simply a sticking plaster for a system which is completely bust?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Kanye West says he's willing to meet Jewish leaders in the UK after a fierce backlash over his booking for Wireless Festival. The rapper said he wants to show change and promote unity after previously making anti-Semitic remarks. He's apologised and previously blamed his bipolar disorder. Chief Executive of the Board of Deputies of British Jews, Michael Weger, has spoken to LBC.
I fully understand Mr. West may have some mental health issues. I've got tremendous sympathy for anyone with mental health issues. But to deal with those, he needs to take a serious period of reflection away from the public eye. If, after a long process of dealing with his mental health issues and a long process of trying to reconcile with the Jewish community, then perhaps in the future he could appear.
Interest rates on some student loans will be capped at 6% for 12 months from September. The government says it'll protect graduates on plans 2 and 3 from inflationary pressures linked to the Iran war. Ministers have been under pressure to act after students raised concerns over increasing levels of debt. The Israeli military has told people in Iran to avoid trains and railway lines, warning of a risk to life. President Trump has threatened complete demolition of Iranian infrastructure if it doesn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz by tonight. Mr. Trump's also dismissed warnings that targeting civilian infrastructure could be a war crime. At least two people have reportedly been killed after a shooting near the Israeli consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul. Gunfire has been reported in the north of the city this morning, with a large police presence understood to be in the area. Details surrounding the incident remain limited at this stage. And tens of thousands of resident doctors in England have started their latest six-day strike in their row with the government over jobs and pay. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, says it's disappointing, but has insisted that people should continue to use the NHS as normal. Dr. Melissa Ryan is on the picket line in Nottingham and explained why doctors feel they have to take the action.
It's simply that there aren't enough doctors, and our worry is in an understaffed NHS, and we have doctors leaving for better pay and conditions, but also just because they're burnt out or they can't get a job at all. My worry is that it's the patients that are going to suffer, because if there aren't enough doctors, those waiting lists are only going to increase.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 32 points at £10,464. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, a dry, warm and sunny afternoon for much of the UK. Some outbreaks of rain possible for the west of Scotland later, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
OK, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 12.04. Lots of breaking news coming thick and fast. This morning, after the Easter weekend, Hog Island is being hit by several strikes. That's according to the Iranian media. This is, of course, the key oil and gas facility in Iran, or oil export hub, I should say. The US bombed the island earlier in the war, but Trump has made a point of saying at the time that it had left Iran's oil infrastructure alone. At the same time, Iran is warning the Revolutionary Guard that its restraint is over. It says it will target US and partners' infrastructure across the region and threatens to disrupt regional oil and gas supplies for years. That warning, of course, coming as Donald Trump is threatening to bomb the country back to the Stone Age and threaten their civilian infrastructure unless the straits open. That is the deadline tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Seems that Iran is getting its response in early. Of course, we'll keep an eye on that. We're also going to talk this hour about some other breaking news which will be of interest to millions of graduates across the country. You will, of course, remember that over the last couple of months, just about getting in on getting a look in amidst all of the Iranian news and the US-Iran war news has been an increasing focus as a result of, indeed, we're going to talk to Natasha Clark, our political editor, who can take some of the credit for this, I think, increasing focus on student loans. And the system, which, as I've reported for many years and talked about for many years, is completely broken, completely bust. We've basically got a bad graduate tax in all but name. We don't have a student loan system that is worthy of the name. Well, the government, having initially said that the system was fair and is working reasonably well, have announced in the last hour or so that interest rates on Plan 2 and 3 student loans, which cover the vast majority of graduates today, will now be capped at 6% from September. The current interest rate on Plan 2 loans is currently paid at a rate of between RPI, Retail Prices Index, which is a rate of inflation seldom used in any other government area, plus 3%. So at that moment, it means the rate varies between 3.2% and 6%. The government now saying it will be capped at 6% from September. Question is whether this really, particularly in a context with the prospect of the Iran war pushing up inflation, whether this will be enough. Let's talk now to Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. So some movement on student loans, Natasha, but is it very substantial?
Lewis, I think this is a good first step, right? And I think actually, you know, when we were talking about increasing mortgage rates after the Liz Truss mini budget, the Ukraine war, we weren't talking about people on student loans seeing their interest rates on their student loans be going up. So it's really interesting that the government are taking this decision today on student loans. So they're capping the interest on student loans to 6%. So at the moment, it's RPI plus 3%. They say they're doing this in a bid to provide stability over the Iran war, of which experts think it's going to push up interest rates. So obviously that's going to have an impact on mortgage and on student loans. And it's interesting that the government have acted so far. They've given heating oil funds and they've said that they will help us on energy bills, but only for the lowest incomes. So the idea that the government are then prioritising students potentially above people on mortgages is potentially a really interesting development from the government. And I think it shows the direction of travel. They know this is not a silver bullet. They know it's not going to fix all of the unfairness in the student loan system that has existed for so long. And this is also just temporary, Lewis. It's only going to be for a year. But obviously, as we know, when governments cut things, like with a 5p cut to fuel duty, they then find it very difficult to reverse their decision. So I think this will be an interesting first step. But the government's saying they are going to go far further and look at what the inherent unfairness in the student loan system will be.
Well, I suppose as much as you know, journalists, we might like to take the credit for raising the salience of this issue. I suppose in a way, what the government is recognising is that this is a foretaste of the inflation, which is almost certain to be already working its way through the system as a result of the Iran war. Because if the government were to leave it at the moment, given that the current system is RPI plus 3% depending on earnings, well, my word, the way that inflation is likely to go as a result of the Iran war, well, it could, as we saw during the COVID pandemic, get to very high levels. And of course, there's precedent for it as well, isn't it? Because if I remember correctly, during the COVID period, the government again capped the rate of interest which were being paid on the loans, because again, inflation was so high. So if you'd left the system as it was, RPI plus 3%, you could have had students paying, you know, 11, 13, 14% or whatever.
Yeah, this is, I think, a little bit of a warning sign, I think, from the government that we are seeing. And look, we don't have any actual forecasts. I was just looking at what the current rate of RPI inflation, as you say, there are different rates of inflation. The government tends to use CPI, but this is RPI, and that's what's used for to calculate student loans. So that's 3.6% at the moment. We don't have really any forecasted figures in light of the Iran war. The last ones that were done, you'll remember, obviously, when Rachel Reeves stood up to deliver her spring statement, it was already out.
I think we can rip those up.
I think we can rip those up, Lewis. So that was saying that it was going to get to 4% RPI inflation by the end of the year. This, I think, is a sign from the government they expect it to probably go far, far higher, and they are taking action now. But I think, you know, a bit like COVID, it is just going to open the door, Lewis, to other sectors saying, well, what about my sector? What about my mortgage? You know, I'm sure we'll be on the phone to the Treasury later saying, what about my mortgage? That's not going to have its interest rate capped. So it's an interesting one, but it is just going to increase pressure on the government. It's not going to cost them very much money. It's also worth saying, Lewis, it's only a few hundreds of millions of pounds, I'm told. And I'm also told that the Treasury has agreed to pay for that. Again, that is an opening the door.
That's a relief.
It is a relief. Well, as opposed to the Department for Education, who might have to have it from their own budget.
Doing a whip round.
Exactly. But this is, I think, going to really, I think, shock people in government and out, because they are going to say, well, how much do you expect that inflation is going to go up by? We don't have any calculations about what that's going to look like at the moment. At the moment, experts think it's not going to reach those 11%, those 12% that we saw during COVID, but we never know. Could be.
So let's just remind people, particularly for sort of older people who maybe perhaps they have relatives, maybe they don't, but certainly won't have first-hand experience of the system. As things stand at the moment, why do so many people think the system is so unfair, in a nutshell?
I mean, essentially because you're charged interest from the moment you start studying. That's why it's unfair. It's not the case of any other loan that happens in that way. And also, it's basically not, obviously it's based on your income, but it can be, it's exponential. You're paying back the interest without actually paying back any of the loan. But actually, Lewis, speaking to people who are around this age, I think the biggest unfairness they feel is that they were told this wasn't going to be very much at all on top of their sort of salaries. They were told, you're not going to see it on your payslips. You're not going to feel it. It's not going to be very much. But obviously, when the fees went up from £3,000 to £9,000, we saw these interest rates go up exponentially, the amount people were borrowing go up exponentially. And these people were told, you're not going to see it. It's going to be a graduate tax. And also, you may never have to pay it off. And as you've been reporting on this for a very long time, there's that awful squeezed middle where you're paying back more and more and more, and your interest rate's still going up and up and up, and you're barely paying down that interest rate. So overall, a very unfair system, many people think.
So to remind people, the system basically is that you pay 9% of your income over a certain threshold, about 27,000, I think it is now.
Yeah, it's just about to go up to 28,000.
Yes, exactly. And you pay that, and during that period, 9% of your income, so it's reasonably substantial, particularly at a moment, of course, where it doesn't take much with the freezing of the higher rate threshold for income tax for you to find yourself quite quickly as a graduate, maybe earning, you know, 50,000 pounds or whatever it happens to be, something around there. You find yourself over having a marginal rate of tax of approaching 50% when you include national insurance and so on, or certainly between 40 and 50%. So there's that. But also the point is, as well as being forced to pay very high rates of marginal tax relatively early in your life, that the stock of the debt continues to accumulate so quickly. In fact, you have to basically be earning around 66,000, which is a high wage, particularly for a young graduate, just to even begin to pay off the interest. So people listening to this will every year, even if they're on a decent income, say £60,000, which is a good income, logging onto their accounts every single year and finding, oh, I've been paying 9% of my income. Goodness gracious, that's quite a few hundred pounds.
It should have gone down, you'd think.
Surely it's gone down, or at least stayed the same. Oh no, it's gone up. Mm. And that does not feel like a fair or proportionate way to tax or to pay for higher education in this country.
No, and of course we shouldn't forget that obviously the government and the Students' Loan Company have in the past changed the terms of those loans. Again, something you don't get in any other loans, in any types of mortgages that exist out there, that the government can say, well, actually, we're actually going to change these terms of this loan. We're going to change the interest rates. And again, they go up based on inflation, and previous loans have not done so. They've not been tacked to inflation before. It's been a standard flat rate is inflation, your flat rate of interest that you're paying back. And these are RPI plus 2-3%. It just seems unfair. Many people think it is a great injustice that these people can change the terms of these loans long after you have already taken them out.
So let's be clear here, we should call this, shouldn't we? Because the government are doubtless going to portray this as a sort of a concession, you know, that they're addressing the concerns, not just from voters, but from some of their own MPs, particularly some of their younger MPs who themselves have got those loans and are paying it off from their MP's salary. The truth is, this is not a reform of the system, or even really a particularly significant concession. The truth is really that this is actually doing something that the government has done before, which is that they are seeing something come down the track which is going to be a very bad thing. It's really a canary in the coal mine. Basically, they're seeing that we've got inflation coming, and they cannot, as unfair as the system is, they cannot have a situation where basically students or graduates are paying 10, 11, 12% interest on these loans where interest is already exorbitant. Basically, this is an early warning sign rather than a reform for the inflation that is to come.
I think that's completely fair, Liz. That's exactly how I see it. And we should say that, you know, because those incomes thresholds have been frozen for so long, it means that obviously it is going up to 28,000, as we mentioned, in the next tax year. But it will mean that more and more people, as their incomes are dragged up, they're still paying yet more in that interest, yet more in that student loan money that's being paid back. Yes, I think you're right. This is a symptom from the government. They feel that these inflation is going to reach potentially very high rates. This, I think, is probably low-hanging fruit for the government. Capping the interest rate is probably the least they can do. They've been looking at lots of different options to reform the system, to reform Plan 2, Plan 3 loans already. I'm told that work is ongoing. So they are still looking at what they can do long-term to try to make the system better and fairer. I think the next step is going to be making this cap, this freeze, essentially just to continue. It shouldn't be for a year. It should be for longer. And also to to increase those earnings thresholds in line with inflation every year, exactly like the income tax brackets go up in line with inflation every year, apart from the fact that Rachel Reeves is obviously frozen for the next 3 years, but they should be going up too. That's low-hanging fruit that the government can look at the moment. But Lewis, I don't know if you saw over the weekend, there were some reports about the highest possible interest, highest possible student loan. Somebody FOI'd the student's loan company. Would you like to take a guess at how much the maximum amount one student has got in terms of their student debt?
This is a fun game. Maximum. This is all I was doing with my family over Easter.
Is it? Good
200k?
More.
Quarter of a mil?
More. Sorry.
More?
Yeah.
300k?
£314,000 is the maximum.
What they've been studying?
What are they? I mean, probably
how many
medicine,
degrees
I
they
imagine.
Got?
Probably medicine, I imagine, because it's a long, long course.
But medicine and veterinary science.
Probably, yeah. Something.
And architecture.
They wouldn't
and
say,
engineering.
They wouldn't say
and
because the FOI would protect the person involved, so they wouldn't give out any further details of that.
Do we think they're going to pay it off?
Oh, they're never going to pay that money off.
Natasha Clark there, LBC's political editor. I want to turn the conversation over to you. Do you think that this cap of the interest rates, which, as Natasha said, at the moment is only for a year, is this enough in terms of reforming this student loan system, which has become so invidious? Or is it merely a sticking plaster on a system which is bust? And also want to hear from you if you have one of these loans. Just let's do it on air right now. Let's do it live on air. I want you to log on to your account and to prove to all of those people, and there are some of them out there, believe me, who don't think it's that bad and it's fair enough. You've been to university and we had it tough back in the 70s, blah, 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 blah. Open it live on air. Go onto the website. Go onto the government portal and tell us live on air how much debt you've got and how much it's gone up by over the course of the last year. 0345 6060973. 0345 6060973. We'll also be keeping an eye on what is going on in Iran and what the IRGC is saying in response to Donald Trump's imminent threat to bomb Iran's energy and civilian energy infrastructure. That's all to come. 1218.
This is LBC.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Morrison to Lidl and saving £41 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/you save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value.
Prices check 26th of the 3rd, 26. Morrison also sell other products. See online for more details.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve it.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
Time is 12:19. Let me just put in a nutshell exactly why I think this system is one of the great injustices of modern British politics. And I want to hear from you about whether you agree with that or disagree with it, and whether you'd be willing to share just how much your student loan or your fees have gone up by in the last year, the debt that you've got. 0345 6060 973. This was sold to people, to graduates, as Natasha was saying, as a fairness, as a just part of the tax system, because why should other taxpayers fund your higher education? Now, let's leave aside for a second an obvious problem with that argument, which is that's kind of not how tax and government services work. We all pay tax in for services that we do not receive. I don't have children, and I have no problem whatsoever with my taxes being spent on other people's children. I have no, thankfully, any relatives in any form of social care, or right now in hospital. I have no problem whatsoever with my taxes being spent on other people's social care or other people's health care. There are all sorts of people around the country who require extra support that I don't require or receive, and I'm perfectly happy for my taxes to be paid for that. Hopefully I'll go through the year without being a victim of a crime. Therefore, I don't need the police service in that particular way. I'm very happy for other people who do. The list goes on and on and on, but it's just graduates likewise. Graduates who have that special category of the way that the tax system is paid to them. I'm not in receipt of a pension, and the terms of my pension could well change by the time I get there. But I'm very happy for my taxes to be spent on people's pensions. But it's so invidious, in particular because it was sold to graduates as being something that they wouldn't even notice. And quietly, bit by bit, change by change, a succession of governments, in particular after George Osborne, or during George Osborne as well, and David Cameron, changed it from being a system that I had when I went to university between 2007-10 on the original student loan scheme, which could still be recognisably called a student loan scheme because it was possible to pay it back, as I did, albeit it was a bit annoying, but I could see, you know, 400 quid coming out of my pay packet every month. But it was something that I could see every single year I was paying it off. And it felt like an achievement when I did about 6 or 7 years ago. That was quietly changed by a succession of governments to make it nearly impossible to pay off, and instead has just basically become part of the tax system itself. Quietly, bit by bit, an extra 9% for graduates each and every month, just at the moment when they should be saving to buy a house or get a deposit or whatever it happens to be, having kids. That extra 9%, hundreds of pounds a month, could come in real handy. And yet, as it is, basically, it is siphoned off and no one was really told about it and no one was really asked about it because it was presented as a system which is something that graduates could pay off and a stock of debt that graduates could pay off. And that is not the system we have. And one other thing in addition, the really invidious thing about it is when George Osborne, remember him, when George Osborne decided to abolish student maintenance grants and replace them with loans. The net result of that, your average poorer kid is going to university and leaving university with more debt than a richer counterpart whose parents will pay, give them the money to support them through their maintenance or whatever it happens to be, or their tuition fees. So guess what? University, which is supposed to be the great social leveller in this country, which is one of the few ways in which you get some social mobility in this godforsaken island, which is still so much determined by inherited wealth and class privilege. Guess what? We've literally set up a system which embeds pre-existing inequalities, both between the generations and within the generations. Whoop-dee-doo. Fantastic. Well done, successive governments over 10 years. Your thoughts, 0345 60 60973. William is in Edinburgh, I think, has a rather substantial debt of his own. William, good morning. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Lewis. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm all right. I've got that off my chest now. I can calm down. What do you have to say?
Well, I was just calling to say I studied chemical engineering 5 years at Heriot Watt in Edinburgh, and I've now accrued a loan, my last checked, of £117,000.
£117,000. And when did you leave, William? When did you leave higher education?
About six years ago now.
And how much has it gone up in that time?
Well, it was originally about £68,000, so you do the maths on that.
So you left 5 or 6 years ago with £68,000 in debt, a not inconsiderable sum, and now you have nigh on £120,000 6 years later.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be paying that for the full 30 years, and then it's going to write off because it's not payable.
I love it when ministers turn around and go, oh, it's all right because it's written off after 30 years. Oh, great. Basically, my entire working life. Oh, fantastic. You know, like I'll get to sort of my mid-50s, or and it's actually increased to 40 years now as a result of recent changes. So I'll get towards retirement and then I can finally start earning my full wages. Whoop-de-doo. Well, fantastic.
Well, I was lucky enough to get a bonus at work, 6%. So I live in Scotland, so 42% of that's income tax, national insurance, and then 9% on that. 60% of that was taxed instantly.
So you were paying a marginal tax rate of 60%.
Yeah, total bonus, 60% of that was taken.
So how much of your bonus did you pick up in aggregate
after tax? Well, I'm happy to share it was about just over 3,000, and I got about just over 1,000 in the end, about 1,200, I think.
How does that feel?
Well, you know, tax should be paid, and I'm happy paying tax. I'm happy to to say I'm in a higher tax bracket, so I'm in a fortunate position. But the extra 9% on an unpayable loan seems an insurmountable sort of position, if you like.
And practically speaking, as a you know, young man sort of making your way in the workforce, and obviously trying to start in life, and you're doing a very useful, you know, you had a very useful degree, engineering. They always tell us we need more engineers and so on. What effect, practically speaking, in your finances and in terms of your life, does it have?
Well, I'll tell you what, it gives me two options, and it's either look abroad or it doesn't really motivate me to sort of, you know, progress my career too much. You've only got a certain amount of, a definite amount of time on this earth, don't you? So, you know, what's the point of breaking your back if you're not getting rewarded for it?
So it's a disincentive to work, to labour.
Absolutely, absolutely. You either look elsewhere or you sort of use your time differently, if you like.
William, in Edinburgh, grateful to you. I can see a text here from James saying it's not a debt, it's effectively a graduate tax, which it would be called in many other countries. James, I agree with you, but my point is to say is that we have a world which is betwixt and between, which is the worst of both worlds, because what we've got is a bad graduate tax. Because if we actually had a proper graduate tax, at least what you could do is make it properly progressive and make the richest graduates pay most back, because they're getting the most benefit for it. The system we've got at the moment is not really progressive, but insofar as it is progressive, because you have slightly different interest rates levied at different levels, you basically create a system where the graduates who don't earn that much don't pay that much back. The richest are the ones able to pay it back off most quickly. And it's those in the middle who have got some benefit, but maybe not loads of benefit from their degree, who end up basically paying a secondary tax for the rest of their life. Well, a tertiary tax on top of their national insurance and their income tax. They're basically paying three income taxes, potentially for decades. That's not progressive. That's not right. So if we're going to have a graduate tax, let's have it rather than this one through the back door that really does none of the above. Let's talk to John, who is on the Wirral. John, good afternoon.
You're okay. Just to give you a context, I graduated at 18 and I'm now 36. Sorry, at 21 and now 36. I had a plan one for my degree from Liverpool Uni when I sort of finished. That was at £27,000. I've got a plan two from retraining to be a teacher a couple of years later, which is at £9,000. I now owe £44,000. Each year, I'm roughly paying just over £1,000 off, and my interest is almost double that. I worked all the way through uni, so I started, the deductions were taken because I was working at times 40 hours a week, so deductions were taken from 18 all the way through. I am more in debt with student loan than when I first started.
And I think, John, you remind us of something really important, which probably doesn't get discussed enough. The very jobs that successive governments tell us are most productive and useful, either kind of the sort of jobs, you know, teachers or doctors or nurses, kind of core workers, right? Or indeed jobs that they tell us are really economically useful, which are, you know, engineers or scientists or anything that requires postgraduate degree. We're literally building a system which disincentivizes the brightest and the best from doing those things, because you're going to have to study for longer in postgraduate study, and you're going to leave with even more debt than, you know, maybe someone who studies a different sort of degree, does it for 3 years and goes to get a job in finance or whatever it happens to be.
I have my partner's a GP as well, and obviously she's a year younger than me, so 35. We worked out student finance, because I obviously said about Martin Lewis had put on about reclaiming for overpayments, and the NHS is quite notorious as well for, because they move between different training providers and practices and so on. You can reclaim obviously overpayments, but we calculated hers. You know, she's earning a very good salary, and she's not going to pay off, and that's a, you know, it's a medical professional, which really obviously traditionally has been a high paying role. You know, it's just not possible. You know, you really have to be earning a huge amount, private business, your own business sort of thing, I think, to pay off. Otherwise, until I'm, you know, 10 years off retirement, I'm paying a 10% tax, essentially, if you rounded it up across my salary the rest of my life. Really.
Practically speaking, John, for both you and your partner, I mean, what effect does it have? You know, what do you think you will not be able to do, or it will be harder to do, that it might not be if you didn't have this outgoing between you every month?
we've got two children, so we've got a one-year-old and a four-year-old. So if you're talking 10% across our salaries as just a figure, you're talking £8,000 that's being taken away from us in the current economic climate. £8,000, that's a substantial amount of money, where realistically we're living, in our professions, we're still living paycheck to paycheck at 36, really, because obviously
can't save.
You've got nursery fees on top, so everything else, you know. Whereas I look at my father, he was a GP, worked 5 days a week for his whole life, but he obviously didn't have those university fees, so he had 50% tax, essentially, where at that point nearly.
Just briefly, John, what would you say to people who say, well, you know, they don't have much sympathy in the sense that, look, you've gone to university, you're obviously, you know, you've got sort of middle-class jobs as a result of it, you wouldn't have had that, and that somebody who hasn't gone to university shouldn't be paying for your long-term benefit from that degree?
I agree with them in some respects. I think, I know it sounds sort of terrible to say, but I will not be telling my little boy he has to go to university. That was what we were kind of plugged with. It was, you should go to university. Secondary schools were geared up for putting us into university. Some of my closest friends who are in the best positions, you know, financially, have their own businesses. They've been in the trades. They are, you know, builders and so on. They've gone off and done other things, or they've gone through graduate programs with companies direct, like KPMG, where they've paid for their education, they've earned while working, and actually they are then in a better position. So there's so many other routes, I think, nowadays, and that traditional model, which there should be. And I think that's what I would say to my little boy when he's another 16 years or 15 years.
John, on the world, so grateful to you. And yeah, I want your thoughts on all of this. Do you now regret going to university as a result of the stock of debt that you've got? And that pains me to say. I mean, I was the first in my family to go to university. For me, it has been the gateway to a whole different sort of life and opened different horizons that, you know, a few generations before, even a generation before, you know, members of my family who were, you know, cleverer than I am, absolutely, you know, brilliant, brilliant people, just would not have had that access and that ladder of social mobility. But have we created a system which is almost disincentivizing that now? And as I say, I want to hear from you about, just to bring it home for people, just exactly how much debt you've got. Go and have a look what you've got right now on the government gateway and tell me how much it's gone up by in the last year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. 0345 60 60973. We're going to be talking about the Artemis mission briefly after the news and whether it's all worth it. First, news headlines at 12:33 with Tim Humphrey.
Kanye West says he would be grateful to meet British members of the Jewish community after backlash to his headline slot at London's Wireless Festival. The rapper claims he must show change following past anti-Semitic comments, insisting his only goal now is to present a show of unity, peace and love. Interest rates on some student loans are to be capped at 6% from September. The government says it will apply to those with planned 2 and 3 loans. Joey Barton's pleaded not guilty to assault charges at a golf club on Merseyside last month. The former footballers appeared at Liverpool Crown Court via video link. LBC weather, a dry and sunny afternoon in most places, a chance of rain in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland, and a high of 20 degrees.
LBC.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out BetVictor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics. And options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Calling all young creatives! It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries, and last week I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
chap's been in there pretty funny.
Stuck waiting again.
Tell me about it. I've spent all morning trying to get through to my GP.
Oh, I ditched that stress and joined Benenden Health. They've got 24/7 GP helpline. No waiting rooms, no sitting around.
Really? Sounds like a great service, unlike this one.
We're just about to get moving again.
Press play on your health with the 24/7 GP helpline and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Time is 12:36. Well, let's turn our attention to the stars for a few minutes and consider the success or otherwise of the Artemis program. A reminder, you may have seen some of the extraordinary pictures of the Earth from the Artemis shuttle. Artemis is NASA's flagship program to return humans to the moon, first launched in 2017. It's the first time humans, perhaps incredibly, are going back to the moon since the Apollo 17 landing of 1972. The long-term goal is to build a sustained human presence on the moon and eventually use it as a stepping stone to Mars. And of course, I think we've seen some of the, heard the footage and the exchange between the crew of the Artemis and President Trump. Imagine going all the way to space and having to talk to Donald Trump as your reward. Dr. Megan Christian is a member of the European Space Agency, Astronaut Reserve and UK Space Agency Senior Exploration Manager. Dr. Christensen, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Has the Artemis mission been a success?
It's certainly looking to be a success, but the mission isn't over yet. They have to splash down safely, and not until then can we actually call it a success.
What is the... I mean, obviously, astronomers will have much to learn from the mission, and obviously, I mean, it's hard not to be inspired by it, but what are the concrete, realisable benefits of so much money, time, effort going in to do something that, after all, we have done before, which is land on the moon, which we did all the way back in the late 1960s? Early 1970s.
Yeah, if you think about it, the budget at the time was 5% of the US budget during the Apollo era. Now the NASA budget is 0.5%. So it's quite a different era that we're living in. But really, the reason is different. At the time, we were going there to be the first. Now we're going there to stay, to build a sustainable lunar presence, work out how to live and work on another celestial body. So eventually we can do that further afield, you know, at Mars as well in the future. And if you go back to the Apollo era again, there are about 36,000 patents that came out of that, that were used for life on Earth. And, you know, some of the really big technological benefits that came out of that were miniaturization, you know, being able to get to the point where we have huge amounts of computing power in our pocket. So this is, you know, setting off that next generation. They were the Apollo generation, we're the Artemis generation.
As inspiring as it is, and I certainly find it inspiring and the pictures are astounding, is there not a rather different gloss and a rather different picture and story that we could tell about it, which is that as much as this might be about pushing the final frontier, it's actually about what it's always about, which is about geopolitical great power competition and actually the weaponization of space. Why is the Trump administration so interested in the moon? I suspect it's not about pushing the limits of human endeavor, is it? It's really about the fact there are lots and lots of minerals on the moon that the Trump administration wants to get its hands on and that they want to make sure the Chinese don't.
I think in terms of timing, you're quite right. It is a geopolitical decision to go back to the moon now, and to again try and get there before the Chinese. That has been stated. So yeah, there are definitely geopolitical elements to it, but there's a whole program around it. So there's the Artemis Accords, which is a set of agreements between, I think there are about 60 nations as part of the Artemis Accords, and the UK was one of the first to sign on, which is about governing how we are going to do this, how we're going to live and work on the moon. And so I have faith that using these kind of structures, we are going to do it in a more regulated, sane kind of way.
Zoe Williams is a columnist for The Guardian. Zoe, are you inspired?
No, I'm not remotely, although I don't want to be rude to any astronauts or astronauts as a professional body, because I can see that a huge amount of care and passion goes into this. But really fundamentally, you know, we have very urgent problems here on Earth, and the idea, it just feels like, if anybody would nail down the point of space for me, you know, if it is exploiting the minerals of space, then I just think that kind of colonization agenda is sort of sickening and not at all the orientation that we need to resolve the problems that we've got on Earth. If it is about kind of discovery, I would posit that you can make those discoveries if you're like right here. You don't need to go into space and accidentally discover miniaturization. You can discover miniaturization on Earth. And when you read so much testimony from people, you know, from Apollo missions, one of the Apollo 8 astronauts said that their total focus was on the moon and they weren't even thinking about looking back on Earth. But once they did, once they got there and looked back, the complete abiding impression it left was just the vulnerability, the preciousness, the solitary beauty of the Earth, and the idea that we're kind of shooting off into space where nothing is alive and neglecting what we've got.
There might be something like, alive in the total infinite vastness of space. Chances are there'll be something alive, won't there?
No, because, I mean, everybody agrees now with the 50s physicist Fermi. What's he called again? I can't remember his name. But anyway, there was a where is everybody hypothesis in the 50s, yes, which is if there is intelligent life out there, why hasn't it made contact? Now, the answer to that, there was a kind of 60s, 70s, 80s answer to that, which was the zoo hypothesis, which is the life out there is so intelligent that they're just watching us like animals in a zoo. They don't want to make contact with us any more than we'd make contact with a zebra having put it in a
but
zoo.
But if that's the case,
nothing's out there, Lewis.
And let's accept that hypothesis, which some people obviously would disagree with or think is unlikely.
Most people agree there's nothing alive.
But if we accept that, and that we are, perhaps, improbably, astonishingly, the most intelligent life in the whole universe, doesn't that make it even more important, and actually, that we're duty-bound to explore space?
Why? But what? What do you want to do?
Because we don't know what's there.
Do you want to strip its resources? Do you want to live there?
If we'd use your logic, Zoe, then we would never have gone to the New World, would we? We would have said it's lovely back here in the old world, it's fantastic.
No, that's absolutely wrong. The logic, if we'd used my logic with the New World, we would have said, look, there's loads of people alive here. Maybe let's treat them with respect and dignity. That's my logic.
But we would never have gone there in the first place.
No, Lewis. I'm saying because we are pretty sure there's not intelligent life out there, that's the reason not to bother going. That's the reason not to waste our resources. It's a waste. Everything at this point in human history is a trade-off. What are you thinking about? Where are you putting your money? Where are you putting your brain? Where are you putting your finest and fittest? Are you putting them towards resolving your own problems or going to look at nothing?
Dr. Christian, Zoe has thrown the gauntlet down there and said, what is the point of space? Explain the point of space to me. Can you do so?
I can try. I mean, I understand the arguments and I hear a lot that, you know, why are we going to space when we have so many problems here on Earth? It's not a zero-sum game in that respect. You know, we are not spending money into space. We are spending money on technological endeavors, which are then a great accelerator for other things. I mean, I gave the example before. But also it is just human nature. You talked about discovering the new world. We can talk about going to Antarctica. We can talk about climbing Mount Everest. These are things that are part of human nature. Now, I don't buy into the planet B. I absolutely do not buy into the planet B. I mean, if anybody asks me what my favorite planet is, I will always say Earth. But I do think that we need to get out there and explore and understand the universe. And I do believe there is life out there.
You the Britons respond to would you go to the moon question. Of the people who said they wouldn't go, 23% said it's because they're not interested, 8% said it's because there was no point, 7% said they were too anxious, and 6% said they were too old.
Well, so what?
I just really like it. It's a really great snapshot of like British defeatism.
But isn't that the point? I mean, that's the point, isn't it? Is it, Zoe? Is that in a way, you know, in our country, we sort of reek of declinism and defeatism. But that's exactly kind of, this is what superpowers actually do. Superpowers conquer new frontiers.
I think the reason people feel declinist, defeatist, I think the reason there's so much climate anxiety among the young especially, I think the reason there is this kind of overbearing pessimism is that our agenda in our discovery and attention and focus focus is determined by people who aren't really putting the needs of the species first, and it's really terrifying. You know, it's it might be human nature to go and see Everest, but if your house is on fire, you go and see Everest.
But the resources of the planet Earth are finite, and who knows?
Exactly.
This presumably will mean, or potentially could mean, that one day that we're able to exploit the resources of planetary bodies that are nearby, and that could be of enormous benefit to the Earth.
That seems the most ridiculous fantasy land. I mean, look, you could see there are so many problems. We need to urgently change completely from fossil fuels to renewables. You can see that all.
But we're going to, in order to do that, we're going to need precious minerals, some of which we could take from the moon.
Lewis, come on. We don't need to go to the moon to make that transition. We need to concentrate on the transitions we know we can make right now. We just need to concentrate on them. You know this. I don't even know why you're putting the opposite point of view.
Dr. Christian?
You know, to do these things, we also need to innovate. And really, to innovate, we need to be inspired. And yes, I accept that there are people that are not inspired by this, but there are many that are.
Yeah, and okay, no, for sure.
please let me go on. And also, I think you also have to take on board everything else that comes out. You know, space exploration started with somebody going into orbit, but now it is our entire economy. It's based on it. You know, our entire economy is based on the navigation, the GPS that we have, the communications that we have from space. And also, we're talking about climate change. Over 50% of the variables that we have to monitor the climate change, the changes that are happening on our Earth, can only be monitored from space. And okay, so that's not with humans, but it started that way.
Final word to you, Zoe.
Well, I mean, I'm really happy that we've got means to monitor from space, but now I wish we would use that data we're getting to just get serious and adult about the much more urgent problems we've got than whether or not there are minerals on the moon.
Dr. Megan Christensen, member of the European Space Agency, Astronaut Reserve, and Zoe Williams, columnist for The Guardian. If you've got any thoughts on that, do you think that we should be focusing more here at home rather than spending billions and billions and billions of dollars trying to get to other planets? Or are you inspired by the Artemis program? 0345 60 60 973. Also want, for the last 10 minutes or so of the show, to hear from you about your own student loan experiences. Lewis Goodall sitting in for James O'Brien all this Easter week, just about, isn't it? Or after Easter week, I suppose, here on LBC. The time is 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Dear Kanye, show us you understand your due hate. Pay penance with time at least, and then we'll talk about performing. And will Trump really obliterate Iran tonight?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs, and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
All right, we've got Simon on the line. Simon, young people, they're just all a bit lazy, aren't they?
What are you doing?
Welcome to McDonald's.
Can I get 6 minutes, please?
Of course.
Some say young people are work shy.
but at McDonald's. We hired 47,000 of them last year.
Thank you very much.
Hey, how's
your night? George here, who keeps things running during a Friday rush. Resilience. Making it happen at McDonald's.
Looking for a new kitchen that you can't wait to come home to? Wix has over 80 kitchen styles, from ultra-modern to timeless classics, and options for every budget, with kitchens for first homes and forever homes too. So book your free kitchen design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
Time is 12:50. Just a few inventions, we should say, from the space programme that we got. We got memory foam. That was developed by NASA in the 60s to absorb shock in aircraft seats. We got scratch-resistant lenses. We got CAT scans and MRI technology, water filtration, cordless power tools, freeze-drying, invisible braces. Baby formula. Research into algae-based nutrition for long space missions led to the discovery of fatty acids, now used in the majority of commercial infant formula worldwide. Firefighter breathing apparatus, temporal mattresses, running shoes, shock absorbers, and of course, Velcro. Where would we be? Where would all the little six-year-olds, and indeed, even some of us adults who never really properly learned to tie our laces properly, be without it? George is in St. Albans, where I think has something to say about the space programme. George.
Lewis, you absolutely nailed it. Where would we be without Velcro? I mean, yeah. You know what I mean?
I didn't think I'd say that on the show today, but you know what? It takes all comers.
Listen, I've been really inspired. We always need to be reading. I went back to uni in my late 40s to do a master's degree to learn new skills, re-inspire myself, and it's just been the best thing I ever did. Meet new people, open, you know, broaden horizons, insert appropriate cliche, it's all good. And we need these things for the innovation, because these things inspire innovation, which leads to problem solving.
What did you make of Zoe Williams' argument, which is that this is all just sort of fantastical stuff? There's nothing in space. It's a waste of money. And we should be focusing our attention, our resources, our innovation here at home.
Well, sometimes it's not the end goal per se where you get all of the benefits. The journey itself in many of these things has got natural benefits, natural offshoots. And the learnings. Now, I've just been fortunate enough, I've just come back from holiday, believe it or not, just climbed off the train. And I've been following this thing for the past, what is it, five, 6 days, seven yeah. days, watching through the night, the whole Artemis thing. And I've just been so, one of the things that I was really took note of was the attention to detail, how they walked through the preparation. I mean, I was even went and looked at the, you know, the log where they do the step-by-step planning for T-minus, what is it, 3 days, 2 days, 1 day. And I was inspired just by the level of detail that they went into. But if I could be inspired by a plan, I mean, for heaven's sake, imagine the youngsters out there that are looking at this from a science point of view. So, yes, all of those things are true. What she said is true. But what the doctor said is I'm much more on board with that.
You know, just briefly, George, you know what I was, what sort of tickled me most? It was when Trump rang the astronauts up, and the thing that he expressed most incredulity about and the most astonishment over was not the sheer majesty and beauty and vastness of space and how almost an incomprehensible feat that they'd achieved. It was when they disappeared behind the far side of the moon and lost comms with Earth. How awful that must have been for 40 minutes. He just couldn't get his head around it, the idea of not being able to communicate for 40 minutes with anybody else. It was just too much for him. George in St. Albans there. Grateful to you. We've been reporting on the show today about more attacks in Iran. The US carrying out, they've confirmed in the last half an hour, dozens of strikes against military targets on Iran's Hagh Island late Monday night and early this morning. This is a senior US official telling Fox News. US hits dozens of military targets on Hagh Island. No reports that the US has yet deployed troops to take the island. Tim Marshall, of course, is a foreign affairs analyst, author of Prisoners of Geography. Tim, thanks so much for joining us on the show this afternoon. Is this the escalation we've all been waiting for?
Possibly. It's conflicting reports. Some reports are saying that they've hit military targets on Hagh Island, in which case, how come they told us 2 weeks ago that they'd obliterated every military target. Well, maybe they've reconstituted some. And just for context, this Karg Island is where 90% of Iran's oil exports are piped to, which are then loaded onto tankers for distribution to the outside world. Other reports are saying that they've actually hit the oil facilities. So if they've hit the oil facilities, that is a massive escalation, because this is Iran's economic lifeblood. Without it, the economy cannot survive. So I'm afraid, I know it's unsatisfactory, but I think we should wait until we see, were these the military targets on Karg Island, which are on mostly on one part of the island, and the oil terminals are on a separate part of the island. The other scenario, which is related to both, is that this is the beginning of taking out any remaining defences ahead of a ground offensive on the island.
And presumably this is also separate to the threats that Trump has been making over the course of the weekend, which was to say that the Iranians have to open the straits, otherwise, with his deadline at 8 Eastern time tonight, he would obliterate Iranian civilian energy targets. This is separate to that.
Well, probably. Again, this. Well, I think it would be related, depending on what we find out what the targets are. Because if it is the oil terminals, then it is absolutely, arguably, well, not even arguably, I think it's obviously one of the part of the civilian infrastructure of Iran and the Iranian economy. And there are reports of one or two other strikes across the country taking out things like bridges. I don't mean that the big one that was taken out about 3 days ago near Tehran, but other targets. So, again, I know it's unsatisfactory, but we're going to have to wait for more detail. But the two scenarios are, this is the beginning of taking apart Iran's infrastructure, in which case it is almost certain that Iran would respond in kind against the UAE, against Qatar, Kuwait, the Saudis, hitting things like desalination plants. So, you know, if it is that, then we are in the beginnings of something pretty big. Even more escalatory than we've seen to date.
And just briefly, Tim, as well, I think listeners and viewers will still in some ways be deeply perplexed. We saw the president over the course of the weekend, the leader of, the commander-in-chief of the mightiest military force that the world has ever seen, the American Armed Forces, basically in a sort of tantrum, a cri de coeur, basically just pleading with them almost to open the straits and making those threats if they don't. Why is the American military, with all its might, still incapable of opening this narrow waterway?
Geography.
Prisoner thereof, perhaps.
Well, 18 miles, 20 miles across, that's pretty narrow. But it's not even that. I mean, honestly, the thing could be 50 miles across. The point is that if Iran had, let's say, 4,000 missiles, if you've taken out 3,990 of them, which they haven't, but if they had, of those 10 missiles, if one of them hits an oil tanker, at that point, every single tanker stops where it is. The insurance, nobody's going to insure the tankers, and no one's going to go through there with, you know, $100 million worth of oil on board without insurance. So it's because of the geography and because you cannot take out every single missile. You cannot be sure you've done that. And so it given the geography, it's pretty easy to close that strait, which is why they keep putting these deadlines on, and then they realise they're on the brink. And we are on the brink, and you've given the deadline of tonight. That's overnight in our time. So things will be a lot clearer in 24 hours.
Tim Marshall there, foreign affairs analyst and author of Prisoners of Geography. And we didn't even have time today, because we are out of time, to discuss the extraordinary sight of a sitting US vice president travelling all the way to Budapest to actively campaign for the leader of a foreign government. But that is just the news in 2026, folks. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or on the LBC app, where you could also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including The News Agents, including Lewis Goodall in for James O'Brien on Jones O'Brien. Let's call it Lewis Goodall Daily. The best bits from the LBC show every single day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much. much indeed, Lewis. We're going to talk a little later about the changes, or the cap specifically, on some student loans, the interest rates on some student loans. We'll also return to the subject of Kanye West and that concert. Will he, won't he, should he, shouldn't he perform at the Wireless Festival? But I begin with what you have been talking about, Lewis, with Tim Marshall there. Reuters reporting an attack by the US on Karg Island in the Strait of Hormuz, or just off it to be specific. Donald Trump has said he will completely demolish Iranian infrastructure, civilian and otherwise, and that he can take out Iran in one night. The deadline hasn't been passed yet, and here he is, it looks as though, targeting Karg Island again. Do you think he'll unleash the full might of US military as he said he would yesterday? The IRGC is now saying restraint is over.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Kanye West has asked to meet members of the Jewish community in the UK after he faced heavy criticism over his booking for this summer's Wireless Festival. The rapper has released songs called Heil Hitler and Gas Chamber and made other anti-Semitic remarks. He's apologised and blamed his actions on his bipolar disorder. Professor Samir Johar, a bipolar expert at Edinburgh University and King's College London, told LBC people experiencing a bipolar event can develop psychotic symptoms.
Now, what are psychotic symptoms? I guess it's a change in our behaviour, our emotions and our thinking. So thinking things are happening that might not be happening. So feeling persecuted, for example, or hallucinations or other types of psychotic symptoms that you tend to see in people with other psychotic illnesses.
The Home Office is reviewing Kanye West's permission to enter the UK. News outlets in Iran are saying the US has conducted strikes on military targets on Karg Island. The island serves as the country's primary oil export terminal, handling the vast majority of its crude shipments. Donald Trump has threatened to destroy Iran's infrastructure within hours unless it meets a deadline to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The interest rate on some student loans is going to be capped after concerns about the amount of debt graduates are in. People on plans 2 and 3 won't see it go above 6% for the next academic year. Campaigner Ollie Gardner says nearly 6 million people will benefit.
And these are people who are working and they're saying to the government, look, this is not working for us. This is preventing us from doing things like buying houses and starting families and saving into our pensions.
A gunfight near the Israeli consulate in Istanbul has left three people dead. It's reported two police officers were also hurt. It's understood there has been no diplomatic presence inside the embassy for more than 2 years. Joey Barton has pleaded not guilty to assault charges at Liverpool Crown Court. The former footballer and manager will stand trial on September the 1st. The 43-year-old appeared via video link and has been further remanded into custody. The alleged attack took place at a golf club on Merseyside last month. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was down 13 points at 10,423. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. The LBC weather, a dry and sunny afternoon in most places. There is a chance of rain in Northern Ireland and Western Scotland, a high of 20 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Just as we come on air, really, I know that Lewis was talking about it with Tim Marshall just a few moments ago, but there are very credible reports coming in now of a US airstrike attack, or plural attack strikes, on Karg Island, this vital island along the Straits of Hormuz, between the Strait of Hormuz and the Iranian mainland. 2 weeks ago, more than that, 3 weeks ago now, Donald Trump said, I'm quoting now, every military target on Iran's key oil island has been totally obliterated. The president said at the time, this is some weeks ago, that the US has totally obliterated every military target on Iran's Karg Island, but had spared the oil infrastructure. So we don't know a great deal about these strikes that have taken place this morning, but if it is the oil infrastructure, it rather preempts that 1 a.m. deadline UK time, 8 p.m. deadline US time for that warning for Iran to reach a deal on its nuclear weapons, on its military and on other matters before Donald Trump, in his own words, obliterates all Iranian infrastructure, civilian and otherwise. Been an awful lot of conversations here on LBC in recent weeks and this morning about the legality of the war, the legality of those particular actions that Donald Trump is boasting about or threatening. So we've reached a really, we already had reached serious points in this war several times, but we were looking towards that 8 p.m. US time, 1 a.m. UK time deadline to see exactly how far the president will go, how much the Iranian regime and the Iranian military will perhaps hold tight, and see whether he will break that red line of his 1 a.m. deadline. It's difficult to read. This is what Donald Trump, this is what he said, President Donald Trump, in his press conference yesterday in the evening about the Iranian deal.
We have a plan because of the power of our military where every bridge in Iran will be decimated by 12 o'clock tomorrow night, where every power plant in Iran will be out of business, burning, exploding, and never to be used again. I mean, complete demolition by 12 o'clock. And it'll happen over a period of 4 hours if we wanted to. We don't want that to happen. We may even get involved with helping them rebuild their nation. And you know what? If that's the case, the last thing we want to do is start with power plants, which are among the most expensive thing, and bridges. You saw the bridge. The bridge went. We were very close to a deal. And then I got a call from Mr. Witkoff, Mr. Kushner, and J.D. saying, I think they're breaking the deal. I said, tell them that's okay. Don't worry about it. But tell them to look out their window and watch. And within 45 minutes, I gave the order to knock out the biggest bridge. I gave the order, knock out the biggest bridge in, I believe, the Middle East, but the biggest bridge in Iran. And within 10 minutes after I gave that order, that bridge was over. So do I want to do that? No. Do I want to destroy their infrastructure? No. It will take them 100 years to rebuild. Right now, if we left today, it would take them 20 years to rebuild their country, and it would never be as good as it was. And the only way they're going to be able to rebuild their country is to utilize the genius of the United States of America.
Well, they don't seem to be in much mood to utilize the genius of the United States of America. Israel, for its part, has warned Iranians not to travel by train, saying that it endangers your life if you do, also confirming an attack on a third petrochemical site in Iran. That's by Israel. This latest attack on Karg Island, which is the terminal for much of Iran's oil exports in the Gulf, has been hit by several strikes, according to the Iranian state news agency MEHR and a US outlet called Axios, if you're familiar with that. Very early days since that strike was announced. The president also made this threat. Take a listen.
The entire country can be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night.
I mean, this it's either hyperbolic and still foolish, if it is just hyperbole and exaggeration and threat, or he's going to do it. Where the heck does that leave us? Hadley Gamble will speak to us in just a moment, chief international anchor at IMI Media Group, which is based in Abu Dhabi. We were talking just yesterday about whether he's mad or not, Donald Trump, and it's hard to believe that in the space of what, just a